let's start the show.
It's January 19th, 2012. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, Norman Chan.
Hello. You know, we haven't heard that intro audio in quite a while.
Yeah, we had to fake it at CES.
Yes. So when people watched us on the live stream, we didn't hear any of that.
Right. So we were dancing to songs in our own head, and then Drew or Thomas would cue us and tell us when the music was over, we should start talking. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that, actually. I mean, we feel like a real professional production.
It's all part of the magic of show business. It's like, this ping pong ball is going to be a dinosaur, yeah. So be afraid of it.
Or Jar Jar Binks, as yeah. The case may be. How you doing, Gary?
I'm well, thank you.
I'm not going to pointedly not discussing your clothing.
I'm glad that we're finally weaning you off that.
Don't acknowledge it.
No, him pointing out that he's not doing it is his way of coming down off it.
I'm not going to even think about drinking. Just don't do it.
This is
Will's way of coming down off. It's fine. We're moving in the right direction.
We got a gentle transition away from it because some people have come to appreciate that, and it's something they look forward to at the beginning of the show.
Nobody likes it.
That's why we've stopped it.
Instead, we're going to talk about child rearing. And how you're going to introduce media to your upcoming child.
Oh, we're going right into fake outtakes, are we?
This is the pre-show conversation rolling into the show, because I think this is a fascinating topic. We've already established that you ruined Star Wars, the Yoda reveal for Leah.
Not just the Yoda reveal, but many other things.
But the Yoda reveal was the worst.
Explain that, because a lot of people might not have heard.
Well, okay, so traditionally, when I grew up and when you grew up and when Gary grew up, we all watched Star Wars Episode 4, Episode 5, Episode 6. So when you go to Dagobah, which is a hard thing to remember, when you go to Dagobah, the little green Muppet, you don't realize that that is the strong Jedi Master and great warrior that Luke Skywalker is there to find.
That whole setup where, you know, you've been set up to believe that Luke's going to go meet this grand Obi-Wan type Jedi Master, and he's being pestered by this little swamp rat.
You're looking for a beard guy.
This little swamp creature.
Yep.
And then the reveal that he is, in fact, the Jedi Master is one of the great reveals in cinema history.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons why Empire is the best movie in the series.
So many powerful. Right. And the thing is, that was the lowest of the massive.
And this is why, weirdly, one of the things that is so broken about the Star Wars prequels is that if you watch them in chronological order.
Yeah.
People obviously think about the Darth Vader, I Am Your Father. That's considered the great one. That's destroyed by watching him in that order.
Yeah, absolutely.
But people forget about the Yoda one, which I actually think is the better reveal. That's also destroyed. And along the way, there are many other cool little reveals that are broken as well by watching them in that order.
See, I don't know that I knew. I think the Yoda one might have been blown for me by the toys. Because I didn't see Empire in theaters. I was too young for that. So I didn't see Empire until it was on TV or something years and years later. So I saw Star Wars Return of the Jedi and then Empire.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as an 8-year-old, blew it for me. But
I mean, I've long maintained that the correct order to watch those movies is 4, 5, and 6.
That's it?
And that's it.
Yeah, just stop, walk away.
If you have to watch all 6, you would watch 4, 5. You watch them in the order they're made. There's also an experimental order out there that some people are quite like, which is you watch 4, 5, then 1, 2, 3, and then 6.
Oh, so you get the exciting conclusions. Like, you treat 1, 2, and 3 as a flashback.
Wow, I've never heard of that.
That's crazy. People on the edge watch it that way. It's an interesting way to think about it. But my whole screw up was when Leah and I first started going out, she revealed to me she had never – I don't know how this happened, but she had never seen Star Wars. So I was like, stop everything. The DVDs are coming out. But I thought it would be an interesting opportunity as an experiment to watch them, because she had never seen any, to watch them in chronological order.
As an experiment?
And through Leah, I discovered that is a terrible mistake.
So pissed at you.
And she's never forgiven me, and that decision will haunt me forever.
Yeah. It's one of the great wrongs of your life, I think, probably.
But there is a silver lining.
Right.
That now that we're expecting – Leah basically, I think, hopefully took the bullet for our child who will watch them in the correct order, which is 4, 5, 6, and that's it.
Yeah.
My child will grow up. If my child discovers that the Star Wars prequels exists, it will not be from me.
Right. Okay. You're doing no experimentation with orders. You're going with what you know is right.
The correct, the one true path.
Yeah. So do you have a media strategy? Like, I think, should I ever be lucky enough to have children, I'm just not going to have cable. I'm going to make the kids think that the TV is a thing for playing video games and watching movies on.
I do have a strategy. I've been giving this a lot of thought already, but, you know, in the military, they say no plan survives contact with the enemy. And I think that's probably true in child rearing as well.
Okay.
Is that the kid is very quickly going to develop its own personality and want to watch things that it likes, not just the stuff that I'm trying to force on it.
That's a failure on your part.
But, like, I think, for example, outside of public television, children's programming on American television is a disgrace. I have a lot of DVDs of great British children's shows that I loved
Downtown
when I was a
Abbey.
Kid. No, not Downton Abbey, but things that actually sound a lot like Downton Abbey, like Camberwick Green and Trump,
the British version of the Lecture Company.
Kinda, yeah. We have our own versions of all of those shows. There was some fantastic children's television in the 70s and 80s when I was growing up, and I bought these DVDs. So of course, you can still get them all now. That's very big in the nostalgia market.
Yeah.
I bought a lot of this stuff. Just for my own nostalgic purposes, but I will also now I'll have a new use for it, like, because that stuff doesn't age.
No,
like, kids don't care the same thing
applies for American television.
Right, I mean, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Exactly,
the animation is terrible by today's standards, but kids don't care.
Yep,
yeah,
you know, it's not like the Peanuts cartoons are the height of animation, but kids don't care.
They love it
with no 4K. I don't know if
that's
kids
right.
Are able to watch
well,
that. You know?
Well, would you go so far as to, like, build an HTPC and program, like, a channel, like, of stuff
actually a great idea.
Right? Like, AV1
create a whole ecosystem.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I like it.
AV1, AV2 with different inputs, and they're just playing the stuff.
I like what you're saying. Parental control is taken to
Gary
the next
TV.
Level.
The thing you do is once they discover, like, Goodfellas, that's when you introduce Casino and The Godfather.
I could even integrate myself. I could shoot footage of myself and be like the continuity announcer.
So, like,
saying, next up on Gary TV.
Exactly.
It's just another show that I love when I was a
kid. The
kid
goes to school. It's like, oh, did you see what was on Gary TV yesterday? What's Gary TV? You don't get that
it's
channel?
It's a special channel.
It's the best
It's
channel.
A special channel that only I get.
Yeah.
I don't know. Would your kid love you or hate you for that? I don't know.
Love you at the beginning and then hate you at the end. When they go to college and start experimenting and find out that George R.
But the thing is, they'd have no frame of reference to talk to people later on in life. Like, the kids, the shows that they love
good for them.
Would not be anything else that they
saw. But what a story.
I like it. I think I'm gonna lean into this.
Uh-huh. It's a weird experiment. I mean, I think you could do really, really serious damage.
Why have kids if not to conduct bizarre psychological experiments on them?
Right. It's like the tiger mother thing.
Right. It's nothing but A-Team 24/7.
But it is coming from a real place in that I do, you know, outside of PBS and Sprout and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and something, which I think all that stuff is great. I think that what passes for American kids' television, especially on a Saturday morning, is absolutely outrageous. It's just terrible.
It's garbage.
My child will not watch that.
The stuff that we used to watch was garbage. I mean, I watched Transformers and G.I. Joe and all that. It was terrible.
A lot of that stuff was garbage, but because we all watched the same garbage, we had our preschool, you know, water cooler moments.
Right.
You know, the sippy bottle moments, I guess.
Sippy cup moments.
Sippy cup moments.
Sitting around the
talking about, did you see what was on, you know, the All-Stars on Saturday?
Yeah.
And it's crowd television, but you bond over that.
All Stars was good. That was the Looney Tunes.
No, All Stars was animated Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky, and Bo Jackson as a super team.
It actually really bums me out, and I'm hoping it gets rectified sooner or later. I'm sure it will be, but there's currently no box set or Netflix stream or anything of the entire run of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which I think anybody would agree is one of the greatest pieces of children's programming ever made, and that's an American. Mr. Rogers was a national treasure. And even as an adult, I didn't watch it as a kid. We didn't have it in the UK. But even as an adult, they don't run it anymore, but they used to run it on PBS at like 8 a.m. in the morning.
They still run it, don't they?
Do they?
I think so.
I'm not sure. I know they did for a while. About 10 years ago, there was a period where every single morning, part of my morning ritual was to get up, have a shower, get dressed, have my cereal, and sit in front of the TV and watch an episode of Mr.
Switch
Rogers.
From your sneakers to
And
your
I would
outshoots?
Watch it in a completely and utterly unironic way. I watched it the way a child would watch it. And when Mr. Rogers would say, "You are special, you are unique, there's no one in the world quite like you," I'd
be
like, fucking A. And I would feel genuinely validated by his warmth and kindness and go out, and it would fuel me for the day.
You don't get that in the grown-up world.
You don't.
No one
says. The whole point is that you walk out into this barren, cold world where everyone's trying to fuck you over.
Right.
Mr. Rogers was my armor against that.
Yeah. I love Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers is my favorite kids show. That and Howdy Doody.
And you learn weird things about kids as well, is that there was a whole episode one time about how you shouldn't be afraid of the toilet. Like, it was a potty training episode that kids... When you have to start potty training kids and get them out of diapers and sit them on a toilet, little kids often are genuinely afraid that they will fall in and get sucked down the pipe.
Oh, yeah.
And it's you've got to conquer that fear. So Mr. Rogers did a whole episode that was about the toilet is your friend and don't be afraid of it. And, you know, it's genuinely helpful in the child-rearing lexicon.
This is why we need to do the Japanese toilet special, where we talk about crazy toilet technology.
I am afraid of those toilets.
Right.
Even as an adult, I think that's legit.
It's not about being sucked in, it's about being prodded.
Right, and the blaster comes crazy. Out and does a little gentle swipe.
I don't need an alien anal probe on
no,
my ass.
No, thanks.
Yeah.
No, thanks.
So last week was CES. We got back from Vegas on Friday night. I don't know about you guys, but I came home and thought I was going to immediately go to sleep. And then I couldn't sleep until like 11 o'clock at night that night because I was so cranked up still. I took one of the greatest naps of my life on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, but you see, that's how you mess up your cycle.
Now I'm completely fucked.
You got to push through. That's where you do push through. We did this with Oktoberfest, right? Remember, we all came home and I tried to not lay down on the couch because I knew I would sleep.
Yep, yes.
So I sat up, stayed awake until like 7 or 8 where it was at least a reasonable time to go to sleep, and I slept right through
my
cycle.
The sleep of your life.
Oh my God. Yeah. The sleep of the
just. It was really good that it was a 3-day weekend because regardless of your sleep schedule, you could have that extra Monday.
I don't remember Saturday at all.
Yeah.
And I got to say, it helped. I'm actually as much as afraid as I was of getting in the tested party van, that it was good. Especially on the way back, where we got to I got to sleep. It's like when you get on an airplane and it's not that busy.
First class.
And you get to pull up not first class, but you get to pull up the armrests and lay down across a few seats.
Entire row.
I actually got to kind of slumber a little bit in the car, and the general motion of, if you ever do this, you ever find that it's really easy to sleep on a train.
Yeah.
Because the motion of the train actually kind of helps you get to sleep.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I found that very salubrious.
It's a cradle.
I want to tell the story of dropping off the van because it's the last part of the tale.
All right. Well, let's first acknowledge for people watching the cast that they have a new perspective.
Oh, yeah. We changed
today.
The angle.
And for people listening.
The MySpace angle.
Yes. Yeah. We not only do we have a new angle, we're also using something we use on DriveStream, which is a lens.
A wide angle lens.
I see that. I see the little thing.
It's for an iPhone, but I stuck it on the front of the
works
webcam.
For anything.
Works really well.
Terrific.
Yeah.
So after I dropped you off on Friday, Norm, and this is also a listener's choice episode, so we'll get to that in a minute. I got to say, you guys did a fantastic job with the show notes this week. This was a top notch all the way around.
Good.
Dropped off the van on Friday, and I remembered as I was pulling into the rental car lot, oh shit, we didn't pay for the gas option. And then, of course, you know, there's never a gas station within like 4 miles of the rental car.
Did you coast into the on fumes?
Coasted in on fumes.
Oh.
And then I had to go to the gas station and fill up the 40-gallon tank or whatever, it's $100. In the Great White Beast.
Well, because if you don't, they'll just charge you twice as
much. It's like $6 a gallon.
Yeah.
So $4 a
gallon. Land whale is not cheap.
No. Feed. So I when I realized that, I almost cried. Because, you know, Gina was there. She was waiting for me. I was ready to just get in the car and, like, put the seat down and close my eyes.
Yeah, you're over
rest.
It at that point.
Yes. I felt like I had carried my burden as far as I needed to go. I got you guys home safely. And then I could close my eyes and rest.
I was
going to
say, you know, you really did sterling work with everything from the whole soup to nuts of picking up the van and doing all the driving. And, you know, you did more than anyone else. And
Dad will.
If we're going to make you drive to Vegas, then we're going to do it with class, style, and grace.
You did it
right.
Yeah, I was very impressed.
Other than that one-way street.
The way that you had the van wired with all the technology. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was great.
We're going to do a video explaining how all that stuff worked probably early next week because I know a lot of people have been asking questions.
Yeah. It was like an FBI surveillance van or something. It was great.
But then I scraped the roof going into the garage.
Oh no.
Into the rental car return garage.
It's a new car. Was it,
do they check the roof
miles?
When they do the walk around though?
No.
Oh, here so you got away with it.
Shh. Don't tell the rental car company.
Good stuff.
I was going to complain about the poor service we got when we picked up the car, but now I'm not because
you fucked
up
the car.
Fuck those guys. Yeah, fucked up the car.
Talking of poor service, I got an apology from the Encore.
Really?
Hotel, yes, because I registered a complaint.
About?
I thought I was treated very shabbily by their staff.
At the spa or at the tables?
At the IGN party that was held.
Oh, because they yelled at you for sitting down.
But wasn't there no sitting sign a real thing or not real?
There was no sign.
Okay.
Wow. How was their apology? Was it over Twitter, an email,
It was
phone
very,
call?
No, I complained about it on their Facebook page.
Okay.
And I got, then they responded. To be fair, I don't think the way I was treated is in any way indicative or typical.
No, I've had
in Las Vegas, you got to remember, they do a very difficult job. They deal with a lot of douchebags and they mm-hmm. fall over themselves to help you. They're always unfailingly polite. This was one weird case where a security guy was very rude to me and it kind of soured my evening.
Yeah.
And so I felt that, you know, a complaint was justified and I put it on their Facebook page. They responded very quickly, said, "Can you tell us all about it? Send us an email at this address." I wrote a little email to them. I got a very nice email back apologizing.
Get a free room or anything out of it?
No, I was kind of hoping, sometimes they're going to comp you on
pizza
something.
Coupons?
No, no free pizza coupons or anything, but I consider the matter closed. All you want is an acknowledgement.
Well, Mr. Wynn runs a tight ship over there. I like that hotel.
Although, as I was told, he has pretty much checked out of Vegas these days. All his interests are really in Macau these days.
Well, that's where he made his money.
Back right in Jerky Town. So how many miles did we add to the van?
1,500 miles.
It's pretty good.
Wow. I took a picture. So yeah, we unlimited mileage paid off. I think we only filled that tank up three times on the drive.
It's amazing.
So yeah, I mean, you say what you will about the Ford Econoline. I didn't spend a lot of time in the back, but how back seat's pretty comfortable in that guy.
Yeah, I love it. No complaints about the ride at all.
Yeah,
good.
You know, we didn't live stream the ride back.
Thank God.
Were there any highlights from the drive back that we want to share?
Gary,
I think there were some, but I don't think we can share them.
I'm only traveling from now on by car with a personal DJ in the car, because having Gary spinning the entire drive was
Astro Mouse.
Right. Astro Mouse in the van made that drive a much more pleasant experience.
And before I forget, just as kind of an adjunct to that, I did get that cable.
Oh yeah,
I want it, and it's changed my life. I listen to my music in the car.
Yeah, same
because
here.
You know I'm on my own. It's a private space. I can listen to my bad. You know, I have shitty taste in music. I can listen to music. You know, not be worried about bothering anyone else with it. And I plug my iPhone right into the jack. And I usually have done that with a headphone cable.
Yeah.
But what you had in the car was much more interesting, which is a cable that goes from your dock connector.
Yeah.
And then splits into both a headphone jack for the audio and a USB port to keep it charged.
Yes.
So I can now listen to music while I'm charging, which typically I wasn't able to do before because the ports are at either end and it creates kind of a mangled thing in the cup holder.
Right.
And also I don't know if it's a placebo effect, but I think I agree with you that you do actually get better quality music through the dock connector.
Better quality of the dock connector because
it's line level.
It's yeah.
So you never – it's always better to listen to a line level output and then amplify it rather than amplify as you would coming out of the headphones and then amplify again.
Well, and again, I don't know if it's a psychosomatic effect, but like I don't have any like aftermarket speakers or anything in my car. I'd like to get some because I do listen to music a lot, so you want to get good speakers. I've just got the shitty ones that came with my car.
Yeah.
And any time that I would listen to very bassy music or whatever, I'd get that crackle and hear some pop, and I'm like, oh, it's because I have shitty speakers.
No.
I think I'm right in saying – I've actually noticed that less since I switched to the dock. So maybe it's the quality of the sound coming out, not the speakers.
Yeah. Yeah, you can tweak the headphones and turn the volume way down on them, and you kind of end up with an okay situation.
But yeah.
It's always better to use the line.
No, but I like $4 from Amazon.
Yes, exactly.
This cable is one of the – dollar for dollar is probably one of the best things I've ever bought.
$5 cable. Don't step on it because the one we had in the car –
oh my god, that was just ridiculously frustrating.
So after that experience, I went to Amazon and bought one of every one of them that they sold. I've been testing them out this week.
Oh yeah,
we'll have a video that shows that the suction cup mount for the windshield,
that was great.
Yeah. The dual USB.
Oh, I
want to
talk about
adapter.
That as well. GPS Quest is also playing into all this.
Okay.
A lot of tech things came out of this trip.
Well, should we talk about news for a little?
It's funny. I actually got turned on to more tech and more interesting things outside of CES than within it.
Yeah, because actually stuff we use.
Yeah, stuff that we use, useful
stuff
shit.
Stuff that changes your life.
Yeah. All this imagine a world fridge that texts you when you're running out of milk and stuff, that's all very nice pie in the sky. But I just want a better iPhone cable, just the little things that actually make your life better.
Exactly.
They're not sexy, but they're useful.
They're good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. There are two moments from the drive back that I want to highlight that we can talk about, because there's some stuff that we can't talk
about. I drank 36 ounces of Red Bull on the drive back.
Holy shit.
Really? Oh, there's two coffees. Ounce.
Do you want to talk about the worst gas station in the world?
No, okay, that's one of them. Okay. But first, we'll talk about the good thing, which is the dinosaurs. Oh. We got to see dinosaurs. And this is a great, like, Dadwell moment where we drove by and, like, we wanted to talk. Well, I want to see the dinosaurs.
Will was like, I'm not stopping. I want to get home.
And it was one of those.
But we stamped our feet enough that he eventually agreed to make a detour and stop at the dinosaurs.
Yes, Dinosaur Park. It was a diner in the shape of a jukebox.
It reminded me of that thing from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Where he meets Simone.
No, the dinosaurs weren't anything like as elaborate. Cool. But yeah. I love Roadside America. And this was not would not be in the top 100 list of any Roadside America attractions. But mm-hmm. it was still cool.
And so in the back of this diner were these the dinosaurs and you know other wild beasts, King Kong made out
there.
Of metal. So it's like these it's sculptures.
Yeah.
And we didn't actually go in. We just kind of drove by the side of it and got out and took some pictures.
Yeah.
Yep. And we tried to shoot a video, which we'll talk about later, which didn't turn out, unfortunately. But that was a great highlight. It was early on the drive back, and then halfway on the drive back, and Wes was telling me this earlier this week, and he, like, I don't know if it was because we were all tired, but he could not stop laughing at a Will moment.
What did I do?
And Will, and it's one of those things that we really wish we caught on video.
What did I do?
Well, I don't know if you remember, but we stopped at the worst gas station in the world.
Oh, my God. Those people were such assholes.
Let's talk about the actual inside. Remember that. Right? So we used the bathroom.
Off 99 north of Bakersfield. It was a shit Texaco, I think, right as you get off the freeway. Fucking do not go there.
Right. You go inside and the guys are judging you with their – like.
This is racist. You're borderline racist.
They're judging us.
And were they judging us?
They were totally.
They just seemed totally apathetic to me.
Apathetic and like there were stairs. And then
what did the sign in the bathroom was very well marked.
All I remember was you asked me to get you a Red Bull.
Yes.
And because I couldn't find them. You couldn't find them. I found them. And I stood there at the little checkout counter for maybe 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Which doesn't sound like a long time, but it's not like I was waiting because he was helping someone else. It's because the guy was just chatting on the phone.
We were clearly the only people that had been there for a significant period of time.
I know. You look at those on the counter, while how they sell those hot dogs.
His elderly mother also was sitting there just staring at me with a smile on the face like, yeah, what are you going to do? You just have to wait.
Yeah,
you're fucked.
And then in the
you
bathroom,
need us more than we need
remember
you.
Remember the sign that said, pick up. You see that piece of trash that you just dropped? Yeah. Pick it up.
It said, pick up that piece of paper, the one you just dropped. And like, you're accusing me of being falsely accused.
Of littering.
I didn't drop anything.
Right, which did not happen. And so it had taken you about 5-10 minutes to get a can of Red Bull. And this whole time we'd all taken turns using the bathroom. Yeah. And Will was outside filling up the tank.
Yeah.
But the thing, the worst part, and this is the funniest part, was that the actual filling up of the tank took forever.
Oh, Christ. It was the slowest gas pump I've ever seen.
Oh,
okay. Will.
In the 15 minutes it took everybody to piss and you to get the Red Bull, it put 5 gallons of gas in.
Will.
We probably could have pissed into the tank and filled it more quickly.
Was so pissed off. He was yelling at the gas station, at the tank.
Yelling.
You were. This is Wes described it. You were yelling.
I wasn't yelling.
He was saying that, look, you could see the.
You could see the hundreds. You could see the thousands.
The thousands.
Oh, my God.
They just go up slowly.
I could count them. I could see all of them.
And Will was yelling and screaming at the pump and saying, there must be a hamster in there running around in a circle.
So then I kicked the pump and it started going faster.
Percussive maintenance always
works. And
Will
was like, I just kicked the hamster. He's running faster now. And God, spinning faster.
I'd totally forgotten about that.
Will was so incensed.
Oh.
If only we had gotten that in video.
It's probably best that we didn't.
I didn't see that because I was inside waiting for the guy to get off the phone so I could buy a can of Red Bull.
Regardless, I will not be
But that was that was a bad pit stop.
A definite highlight.
Let's see. We saw the solar molten salt solar power plants being built in the Mojave. Mm.
That was amazing.
That was pretty cool.
That big field of mirrors was amazing.
It's like an Archimedes mirror that aims all up at a pedestal.
Yeah.
They're still building the pedestal, it looks like.
Heats up the salt.
4,000 degrees.
Massive wind farms out there as well.
Yeah. All sorts of alternative power in the high desert.
Yeah. Very progressive.
We saw the windmills from the other side, the famed wall of windmills.
On the way out.
And then also, we were smart enough to avoid the fumes of the ranch.
Windows were closed for 35 minutes.
Harris Ranch.
Sweating in there. It smelled like a jockstrap.
And all in all, I mean, we got back at a reasonable time.
We did.
Yeah, I think we rolled in at like 4:30 in time for everybody to help us unload the van, which was great. Yep.
I had such a good trip. I was determined to continue it even after I got home. So I did what I very rarely do, which is I took the time. I unpacked. I hung everything up. I put stuff in the laundry. I put my suitcase away. So I was like, everything was squared away, and I was ready to just move on with my life.
I did the exact same thing, actually. Yeah.
I don't usually do that. Usually I'm just continuing to live out of the suitcase for like the next couple of weeks.
No, you felt very motivated. And we're invigorated that trip.
Yeah, very invigorated.
So we're about breakfast, you know. And
just I've said it before. It was the best Vegas trip ever in terms of my enjoyment. Great food, great company. It, you know, it's one of those things where just all the planets lined up. You know, it just it, you know, we did it exactly right.
I have to say though, I think that fried chicken Benedict would have been better with a biscuit instead of an English muffin on the bottom.
Oh, it was delicious with the English muffin. I don't like too flaking, oily. For that kind of food.
That could be interesting. There was a very good muffin, though.
It was a good nice
like
muffin.
An oversized muffin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can't fault that French toast.
No, French toast was magical. Should we talk about tech news?
Yes, let's close
We're
our chapter.
Minutes in.
Must we?
Close the chapter on CES.
We have a little more CES stuff to talk
about.
Well,
at least the drive, the experience.
Yeah, that's it. We'll do it again next year. I'm already, you know, it's funny. We're 360 some days away. I'm already looking forward to it.
I'm not quite there yet.
Well, Vegas trip. Maybe.
Yeah, Norm was ready to go back Vegas next trip. Week.
Well, that might be a bit trickier for me.
I think the takeaway is that we should go on a road trip sometime before the baby is born and just live stream a road trip someplace real dumb. Go where there's roadside attractions and see dinosaurs on the side of 66 and find the cars from Cars. And then
again, I need if that's going to happen, I have to be very careful in the manner in which I go about that.
Yes,
and also it's not even about getting away. It's like, you know, I want to, you know, be there and help. You know, it's not an easy thing to do.
No, I understand.
So, you know, we'll see. Having said that, you're right. After July 4th, when it's due, I mean,
that's it. It
pretty much closed the book on road trips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
we won't see you until the kid's 18.
See you
20.
In eight, yeah. I'll see you in 18 years
yeah. when we're
talking about the iPhone 23.
They'll call it the U-phone by then.
Very excited.
I'm going to play some music and then let's talk about news. So in case you missed it, SOPA, PIPA protests happened yesterday. Wikipedia turned off, kind of. Reddit was gone, mm-hmm. disappeared.
12 hours.
And a bunch of other sites.
Big sites, WordPress. Yeah.
Boing, boing. Google had the big – I mean, didn't close down. But I thought that piece of duct tape they put across their logo was actually very compelling.
So we turned off our wiki in support, of course.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Google got 4.5 million signatures yesterday.
Good for them.
SOPA. So for We Don't Like SOPA.
That's a lot.
I think it did very well in terms of bringing awareness.
I think the benefit of this versus a lot of those other change your Twitter image bullshit protests was that by actually changing Google, by changing Wikipedia, two of the most heavily trafficked sites on the internet, it brought awareness to people that may not typically follow tech news and may not have been aware of what was going on with the SOPA and PIPA stuff.
A lot of mainstream coverage.
So, yeah. The MPAA said it was violently unfair that these massive tech companies would use their pedestals to push an agenda of copyright violation and piracy, which I think that's a moral victory, if nothing else. And also the good news is that a large number of senators have withdrawn support for the bill.
Yeah, I think yesterday was successful in the sense that a lot of politicians that might not otherwise be aware of it have now become aware that this is a very unpopular
issue. There's
some
weird shit happening.
There's a lot of opposition to it. It's not a vote winner.
Well, and again, just to reiterate, there's a bunch that's wrong with the bill. The major provision is that the five big MPAA companies and these are people you're affiliated with, Gary.
Well, yeah, for me in particular, it's a very difficult issue because this law is supposed to protect people like me. I'm in the business of creating content which is sold and is pirated. I have no information on how many times my movie was pirated, but I know it was many, many times.
Right.
I see the torrent links all the time, and that's upsetting to me. I consider that a violation.
However, the internet death sentence, the power that was given to these companies with this legislation, mm-hmm. Without any kind of judicial oversight or anything like that, was the ability to seize domain names. So www.google.com.
Yeah.
If that one of the MPAA companies complained about copyright violations there, they could actually take that domain.
I mean,
and there's no recourse. It's unacceptable.
My bottom line position on it, and again, like I said, I do see both sides of it. Is that I think piracy is very bad. I do think it's analogous to theft. I think people who habitually pirate content are scum and should be punished. Having said that, SOPA and PIPA are the wrong ways to go about it.
Of course.
They are vastly overreactionary Gestapo type laws. It is like swatting a fly with a nuclear warhead. It's the wrong way to fight.
Well,
this battle.
The cockroaches are the things that always survive the nuclear warheads.
Exactly.
Right? So what are the right ways to do this? Make the content more readily accessible, obviously, for a fair price.
I don't think any of the ways that have been tried in the past. We've already seen that. No, it's kind of like the war on drugs. You can't win it through enforcement.
Right.
I mean, you can stem the tide, but a certain amount's always going to get through.
Right.
Amsterdam.
You cannot win it through enforcement. Although I secretly do smile whenever I hear about one of these, you know, habitual pirates, unrepentant pirates getting sent to prison. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there are some people.
Those
who
guys
are
that show no
violators.
Remorse and have pirated over and over and over and over
well,
again.
The distributors,
and not just well, things. And that's the thing. Not just do it because they don't want to pay for content, but actually are profiting from it.
Right.
And kind of saying, well, you shouldn't make the money because you've created it. I should make the money because I figured out a way to steal it from you and resell it. That's absolutely disgusting to me, and those people should go to jail.
Right.
But enforcing it just in general, I don't think works. I don't think it's because it's not a deterrent, I don't believe.
Yeah.
I don't think trying to guilt people with those videos that force you to, well, you wouldn't steal a car. Yes, they would. The people that would steal a car.
The people that are doing mass piracy distribution are – potential. It's different.
You cannot make a moral argument to someone who has no moral context.
So
they're amoral. And you cannot do it through DRM because pirates will always find a way around it, and you end up hurting legitimate customers more. It just becomes an inconvenience for legitimate customers. You wind up punishing the wrong people. The only way to beat it is through, I think, like the Netflix and the Steam type model, where you just make the legitimate way of getting the content preferable. You make it cheap and easy and a high quality experience. And so people don't have to trawl around on Pirate Bay or wherever it is they go to get this stuff.
Right. I mean, no compromises.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Yes.
A couple of funny things did come out of this. One was the Herp Derp Wikipedia, Herp Derpedia.
Yeah. Very, very entertaining. But also kind of
sad.
It started off funny and then just became depressing.
Yeah. Well, they're a small subset. They're highlighting people who are clearly
people on Twitter
of what was going on.
I think I tweeted something about it yesterday. Occupied the perfect nexus of stupidity and entitlement that is everything I hate about the internet the most. Mm-hmm. Like the typical tweet being, fuck you, Wikipedia. I've got a class paper I need to turn in. Now what am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
Why are you offline? What the fuck is going on? Thanks, Obama.
It was
like a perfect storm of ignorance in every way. Everything about what these people were saying was wrong. The information on why Wikipedia was down was right there on the page that they're not bothering to read because they're too busy complaining.
And the way to get to Wikipedia, if you clicked on the Learn More link, was right there.
And of course, Wikipedia wasn't in fact blacked out. There were many, many ways to get to Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. They just wanted to make sure you saw the page.
Right.
But the bigger problem is, of course, is in just a few years that Wikipedia has been around, huge parts of our culture, which is a dot in terms of,
of course,
human history. Huge swaths of our culture, from students to young people and actually even professional journalists who rely, that we've become incredibly reliant on it now as a source of information. And, you know, that's great in a sense because there is a ton of great information to be found there, but we shouldn't be reliant on it.
It's interesting because those stories, remember when Wikipedia launched, there were tons of stories from mainstream media constantly about, Wikipedia is unreliable. Look at all these errors. We scanned 1,500 articles, and of those, 1,300 had errors that were factually corrected in Encyclopedia Britannica or something like that. Those stories have disappeared in the last four or five years.
The people who write Encyclopedia Britannica contribute to Wikipedia now because they want to spread knowledge.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's all about Encarta.
Norm, what did you do when Reddit was down?
Oh, what's the real question?
Most productive day of the week?
Really? This is a real question?
It's on the list. It's reader's choice, man. Listener's choice.
They're all alternatives. Okay. Counting down until 4 p.m. PST, of course.
I consider myself very fortunate that I don't really frequent Reddit. I have been there. It's obviously a great clearinghouse for interesting stuff, but I'm not addicted to it the way that many are.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry to interrupt. It doesn't matter that Reddit was down because I got into GAF, so
You both got into GAF this week.
That's what I did. Let's save this for the end of the show.
To answer the question that the reader posed.
You were on GAF yesterday. Yeah. It's good. Happy coincidence.
Yes.
There was an Apple education event this morning that I did not pay attention to at all because it was about education.
So I don't know too much about it other than...
It's on the list.
It's on our site. The Apple made three big announcements. One is iBooks 2, and this is their textbook play. So if you read Walter Isaacson's Steve Jobs biography, there is a paragraph, I forget what page it is, like 500 and something, where Steve Jobs talks about getting into, wanting to get into education, seeing the iPad as
Well, they've always
the
played a big part in education.
Yeah. But obviously they don't do anything with, Apple doesn't do anything unless they... doesn't get into a new market unless they really think like they feel like they can change it.
Okay.
And aside from books, which they have had moderate success in with iBooks, I don't think anyone can say that iBooks has been a runaway success the way that Kindle has had been.
Because of their platform-dependent nature. I mean,
absolutely.
That's the mistake.
Education is a place where the iPad being the best-selling tablet can have success. And so iBooks 2 is launched, and they were selling textbooks on it now.
iBooks Harder?
I guess you can call it that. They've
Electric
partnered with
Book Saloon?
No. They've partnered with publishers. And this, to start, it will be high school textbooks, which probably is something that made more sense from publisher's perspective. Because right now, they don't sell many high school textbooks. Because,
right. You sell it once and they pass them down for child to
child.
Right.
When you went to a public high school, the books I got, or at least the ones I got, were – decades old, right?
It depends on the classes, but American history books were always pretty old. And
it was always
borderline
amazing.
Racist stuff,
right?
In there.
In the 11th grade, suddenly your science class got the new textbook. Oh my god, there must have been a big surge in funding this year.
Hey, it turns out quantum mechanics is real. Who knew?
For high schoolers, you can now buy certain textbooks, and I guess schools will have to amend their curriculum to accommodate this. $15 a book, and we're talking, gigabytes. Worth of textbooks, but since a lot of these kids now have iPads, and some private schools are supplying iPads for the classroom, it makes a little bit of sense. It will eventually move into the college market.
Oh, inevitably.
Because that's where the real money is.
Yeah.
And they really – publishers want to get rid of the secondary market.
And e-books are a great way to get rid of secondary
market. Yeah, of course, no used books.
And their current tactic to get rid of the secondary market is to obviously have revisions, new editions of their books every couple of years, right? And so your biology class, you need the 11th edition. The 10th edition might have the exact same text, but some of the pages are a little different.
Now, the thing is, when the electronic model
– yeah.
Technically, you shouldn't have to buy the whole book over again. You should be able to just download an update. But are the publishers really going to do that?
No.
Right.
I mean, the publishers still have the power here. In the biography, Steve Jobs had alluded to the idea of wanting to even hire content creators to write textbooks, and Apple being a publisher itself.
Fantastic idea.
Right. Not going to happen in the short term.
Well, I mean, you say that, but they actually already kind of dipped a toe in the water with those GarageBand instructional videos. Like they were creating educational content with those.
They could use
it as a
threat to bully the current
it's a threat to force the current
right. It's like join our vision of the textbook ecosystem.
Join us or die. 1984.
I could totally see an idea. I mean, someone just said in the chat, textbook DLC in the future.
That's what I'm saying.
Buy the book and you get the addendum, but you still have to pay.
Right.
But
you don't have to buy the whole book all over again.
Right.
The worst thing ever was when I took two semesters of biophysical chemistry and I took spring fall rather than fall spring, and the textbook changed between years, so I had to buy the same $100 textbook twice.
In slightly different editions.
I can see and it's not just because it's coming from Apple. I mean, if anyone was doing this, I would think it's a great idea, because I think the books presumably will be a little bit cheaper than buying the full version. Yeah. And you're not going to have to carry around a big heavy book bag. Right? I mean, these textbooks are often very large and heavy.
Absolutely. I mean, I saw a kid walking across the street, elementary school kid with a massive backpack. And I was like, I remember doing that when I was a kid.
Is this going to screw up high school romances though? Like, can I carry your books for you? It's like one of the great inns. Oh. Like, you're not going to have that anymore.
Man,
I never did that.
No?
No.
I never did either, but I know that's doodles? That's an inn.
Did you strap your books together with an old belt?
No, I
just backpack.
No, but totally.
What am I, Huckleberry Finn?
I don't know. I thought it might be different.
I had someone else do that for me. But like, you're right, Gary. Like all the drawings, the doodles, and the margins of the books. When you pass down the book, you get the entire history of everyone who's ever owned that book.
Right.
It's like, wow, someone in the 70s was writing about this. And
wow, you went to a really shitty
high school. Will these books allow for annotations?
So
it's not the same.
With iBooks, they will have ways for textbooks. They're going to be interactive, of course, with infographics. And you can make notes and pull them out as note cards. So more than just a digital ebook, right, or a PDF file. it's the compromise for publishers is they will have to accept slower fees for books, lower prices for books in the short run, like, you know, $15-$20 books, but in the long term they don't lose out in the secondary market.
I don't think that they're going to accept lower prices
for books. Well, Apple will convince them, because the secondary market, I mean, that's huge, right? There are bookstores. If you go to any college town.
Lower prices, but also lower overhead on creating the books, right?
Lower overhead on creating the books.
Digitally costs much less than pumping out all these thousands of paper copies.
And they guarantee sell every semester, not even every year. Because you buy it one semester,
you
can't transfer.
Yeah.
You can't transfer the license.
Right? You're locked in.
Well, no, you keep the book, but you can't transfer the account.
I don't want to keep the book. I just want to rent the book.
Well, okay, as a student perspective, would you pay $80 for a book and then sell it for $50 later?
Yeah.
Or pay $15 for it once and not have to have the hassle of selling it later?
Interesting.
So the student wins there. The publisher takes only $15 initially, but then they can sell the book again to another 500 students in the next semester.
It seems like a net plus overall. Yeah. It seems like a good thing.
You know who loses? The used bookstores lose.
But that's fine. Those guys are assholes anyway. Sorry, used bookstores.
I mean –
Yeah, I mean, I always worry about what's good for the consumer first and everyone else second.
Right. If their business model collapses because the world changes and something better for the consumer comes along, sorry, Kodak.
Time moves on.
So that's tier one of their announcement today. The second thing is they're also doing iTunes U. So you know how on their
– They already had that in iTunes.
Right, where you could listen to podcasts and stuff.
Yeah.
But now it's more of a – I don't know if you guys ever used Blackboard when you guys were in school.
No. We used Blackboards. They were pieces of slate that you wrote on
the website,
chalk.
Blackboard.
No, they didn't have the web when we were in school.
So iTunes
It freaked me out when I first came to America and discovered that Blackboards here are more often green.
Green, yeah.
In England, they're black, the color they are supposed to be.
Only in upscale private schools were they black in the U.S.
That was actually a very key differentiating factor. You go to a nice college, like, wow, the Blackboards are black. In our public
green.
Schools, grade schools, all green.
Well, because the green ones are just laminate over a particle board or something. They're not actually slate.
Mm.
We transitioned to whiteboards while I was in college. That was a very exciting thing.
Oh, I don't like whiteboards.
I love whiteboards.
So iTunes U will be not only a place for you to download podcasts and video podcasts and stuff, but they're competing with Blackboard as a hub for –
What is Blackboard?
It's a place where professors can sign up and create accounts, and so students can download documents.
Like
and
materials, syllabi and stuff like
syllabi,
that?
Syllabi, notes.
So it's like Khan Academy, but more official.
Yes, exactly. And so Apple is doing this, and that will be open to the general public if the professor wishes. So for people who just want to learn and get documents and not attend the classes, they can do that as well. Which I think it's a standardized place for that is great.
So can you do like a whole like open university, like learn learn your, you have to be enrolled in a school.
You can get access if the professor in school allows.
Well, no, but iTunes U on iTunes right now, you just download whatever
it's just
podcast
podcasts,
you want.
Yeah,
it's like
you can do that.
Lecture podcast.
Yes.
You can watch – you can literally essentially audit an entire class if you want to – like
well,
instead of listening to us in the car, you could listen to –
Right, but is there any way
classes.
But I'm saying is there a way for you to do that in an accredited way where you would actually get some kind of diploma or something?
I don't
probably
think.
Not
well,
through
there
iTunes,
are institutions right now, there's private, you know, the for-profit universities do that all the time.
Well,
no, DeVry
even,
type places.
No, but even real universities do as well. Oregon, my sister did a bunch of correspondence stuff from Oregon State and did most of her degree stuff there because it was cheaper per unit even out of state doing the distance learning for like Western Civ and all that stuff than it was to do it at the school she went to. And
it's definitely available now.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they'll have – I mean there are online courses even at big universities now. Blackboard thing –
the online courses are good if you have – if you want to hurry through stuff that is less important to you.
Yeah. Right.
So you can blow through. Yeah.
When I was in a college and all the lectures were online, they were in real media files.
Mm.
And the trick with students is, I mean, obviously before
real media.
I know. Before the big exam, everyone would rewatch the lectures. Obviously, spend 2 days, you know, rewatching all the lectures that you didn't attend because no one attended the lectures. Everyone shared a plugin or an app. Program, sorry, for Windows where you download the files and you get to watch it in 1.5 or 2x speeds. So a 1 hour lecture would only take half an hour to watch.
So you could basically watch an entire class semester's worth of coursework in a couple of days if you really buckled down.
Using that 2x speed, and obviously the professor talks a little faster, but if you could keep up with the notes.
Oh, I don't like the sound of that.
Oh, man, it was the best. It was a way of min-maxing education.
Love min-maxing education. So, okay, anything exciting for normal people who aren't interested in
There is a whole other element.
So the third part of this announcement is self-publishing and iBooks creation.
Oh, so they're going to get on board like Amazon is with the Kindle singles.
Basically,
so you can
publish
your own iBooks.
Yes, iBooks author, free publishing tool, and you can create your own textbooks and books with rich media stuff.
I would love to know what the percentage of the market iBooks has versus Kindle.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, if I was going to self-publish a book today, today, I would still go with Kindle because I want access to the bigger market.
Well, the thing is, you do everything. It's right. just like it's just no like you don't put
no
your
yeah. There's no exclusivity yeah. agreement.
You don't put your MP3 on Amazon only or on iTunes only.
Does it cost anything to publish on iBooks?
I don't think I don't know. I'm not exactly sure
because it's free. I get it free. Why not just
it says free on the list, but I don't.
Yeah, just
I
put it everywhere.
I'm interested. I mean, worst case, they would probably charge like a $99 like developer license
now,
or something to keep serious people
what,
in.
Now, what's interesting there is out. Apple obviously is very big on content curation and the walled garden. Is presumably they're leaving this open. There's no. I don't know if there's. Is it going to be like an app where they need to review your book? Because they could end up in one of those. You remember that guy that published that book, like How to Have Sex with Children, that was on Amazon, and Amazon got all kinds of shit for it?
Yeah.
Could Apple wind up with a similar situation here? I doubt they're going to have any part of their ecosystem that's just a Wild West. Yeah. But then who would have time to review all the books?
They couldn't do it. They couldn't
books
hire
are
people.
Completely different.
Yeah.
Like, there's a different expectation with books than apps. Because people know what books are.
Right.
People don't know what people at the time didn't know what apps were, so they wanted to avoid
apps
those
can actually be like malicious or swindle you or hack you in some way, whereas a book is just you know could
it
just
worse, it's just bad advice.
Would just hack your brain. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
man, I want to write a really controversial iBook and get. I'll have to think
get
of
attention.
Something.
I think you should. I think you should write a manifesto and publish
just
it on iBooks.
Just what I need is a manifesto.
Yeah. What you need to do is release an iBook the way that you know the way Apple's market ecosystem has you know, it's cheap books but with lots of microtransactions on the inside.
Oh, that's
you want to finish
idea.
This paragraph? Right? You
35
could,
cents.
Right? You got to get 3 stars on reading this chapter.
Ooh, I wonder
and
if
you unlock
could,
the next chapter.
If you
or
like
you could buy right
Facebook,
now.
Facebook, then we'll give you another 2 sentences.
I wonder if you could create Choose Your Own Adventure books.
Oh. There you
I
go.
Would be into that.
Yeah.
That's our ticket out of this hellhole.
Absolutely.
Intel is now warrantying overclocked CPUs.
Yeah.
This is new.
Yes. I think it's in the new Sandy Bridge lines. 2,500 people.
It's their extreme processors, I'm sure, only.
I think it's a wider range. I'm not exactly sure what the models are, but.
They still don't condone, though, is what the notes
really?
Say. I think they
have to have that official policy.
Once they started selling unlocked CPUs at the high end for a massive premium, then they're we don't think overclocking is a good idea became a little less of a real thing to me.
Hmm.
OnLive's iPad app launched a couple weeks ago, the Windows desktop one.
Yeah.
I have not had
a chance to use it because the free – I don't want to pay for it.
We should probably pay for that and do it quick.
The free version is right now it's first come, first serve based on server availability. But from all reports, I think Lloyd did some testing on this. It works as advertised. You can do PowerPoint and stuff.
Wow.
You know, virtual Windows 7 desktop on Live. And I think this is where OnLive, when they first conceived of it and their technology was just fast compression and streaming, they knew they were going to get in this space.
Games were the entree.
Yeah, of course. Games, and then they go into movies, which actually haven't done yet, but they want to get into the cloud server stuff.
So Alienware, at or just after CES,
just
I'm not
after.
Sure.
It was on Monday.
Launched the X51, which is essentially like a gaming PC console. So it's like an Xbox. It looks like an Xbox One size. It's pretty chunky.
Have you seen this, Gary?
No.
Oh. So Alienware had an event in San Francisco on Tuesday.
We were not invited,
unfortunately.
That's not cool.
I know.
We would have gone.
But it was
to
one
that.
Of those like, when you say announcement, it's not like a boring meeting room. They had a like party thing. I hate those things. I hate those events.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, with the DJ. You
gotta like, mingle with people and shit.
Yeah, and then they flashy lights and just announce a PC. It's a $700. Gaming PC, and I'm going to show you a picture right now. You can obviously find it online.
All right, let me see.
It looks just like an Xbox.
It looks very much like an Xbox Slim.
Yeah.
It actually looks a little bit like 75% Xbox Slim, 75% PS3.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, 25% PS3.
It looked bigger than that to me. It made me think of the original Xbox.
It made me...
Because look at the size of the slot to the thickness. It's a big, chunky thing. But
the dimensions are like a foot by a foot by 4 inches.
All right. So tell me more about it because I find this interesting.
So it starts at $700 and I think this is their play to get – like we all know PC gaming is moving to the living room.
Right.
And this is their play to get PC.
So can you have it custom built any way you like or are they just like different levels?
There are different levels. It starts at $700 with an i3 processor and a GeForce like 545 or something.
Yeah.
But – it's not – which isn't going to do amazing graphics.
Right.
I would still rather build a PC.
Yeah.
You can fully upgrade it. The fully upgraded version is $1,150.
Yeah.
With a Core i7 2600, 8 gigs of RAM, terabyte storage, and a GTX 555, which still isn't their top of the line because you're still talking about a smaller discrete GPU.
Right.
After that, you're not going to be able to upgrade this very much.
Right.
So right. you're really you're
well,
really
yeah. I mean, if it's like a console, then you take the good and the bad, right?
Yeah, that's the price you pay for a small, quiet, tight desktop package or living room package.
But I kind of love the idea in theory, but when you start thinking about it, one of the great things about PC is that they evolve. You can evolve them in your house. You just keep swapping out PCs.
You spend $1,000 and then you put $200 or $300 in it every year.
Whereas this is going to have a termination point, right? So if I were to get the top level one, the top level thing, how future proofed am I with that machine?
Not very. No SSD, 330-watt power supply. It'll be quiet and cool, but in a year. I mean, it depends on the games, right?
So I was talking to Matt Buchanan from Gizmodo about this the other day on Twitter, and he's really excited about this because he lives in a small New York City apartment and doesn't have a lot of rooms that can devote to stuff. I actually – the more I use this, the more I like my Ethernet HDMI through the wall because it what it does is it puts all the loud noise – it lets me have as big a PC as I want in another room and run a cable through the wall. And it's silent.
Plus, you don't worry about the data syncing, right? So you don't have you don't have half your games on. I mean,
exactly.
Files on one. And
that bothers me less than you might think because
the noise.
Yeah, well, the noise thing I noticed again. The whole home theater setup, the living room setup, has a bunch of kind of hidden bonuses, and one is because it's not right under your desk or right on your desk. You're further away from it. With the sound of the game and everything, I was playing Saints Row the Third. I played the shit out of that. I wasn't even aware of. You remember how I used to complain playing Team Fortress 2 that my PC would sound like like a leaf blower?
Mm-hmm.
I never noticed it, and I'm sure it was revved up plenty of times, but I never noticed it because I was just 8 to 10 feet away as opposed to being like literally right there, like, under your desk where you're sitting.
Yeah.
You notice it a lot less. So it's not that big a deal.
I think it all depends on your configuration, and I think we built your PC with the intent for it to be quieter than like.
My PC is particularly loud.
Both Will and my PCs are very loud.
I'm sure you did mitigate it, but I'm saying when I sit close to it, I notice the noise. But when I just sit 8 to 10 feet away in a living room type configuration, I notice it a lot less.
Maybe something we should do as a feature would be to take one of our PCs and see how silencey we can get it without sacrificing performance. I'd be kind of interested in doing that.
I couldn't silence mine very much.
Just because of the video card?
Just because of the video card.
Yeah.
I have mixed feelings about this Alienware. On the surface, it sounds like a cool idea. On the other hand, having to replace my PC every year or so kind of defeats the object of having a PC.
The thing I like about it is it's a good entry for people who don't have know-how of building or don't want to
or
buy
just want to commit.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they get into PC gaming and then they do go build their own.
It is still, I mean, entry level $700 is a lot of money to spend to get into quote-unquote PC
gaming. It's not that much more than, say, a PS3 was at launch.
Right, but if I wanted to build, if I didn't care about size as much and you could build for $800 a much more capable PC
always the case.
And get much more satisfying in-game experience than the convenience of having Alienware built one for you. And it's not like you can't build a PC that size. You can build a shuttle-sized PC with mini ITX and still get that performance.
That's true. That's true.
It's still – I mean, I think just as a marketing concept, the idea of seeing a PC in a very console-like configuration is cool.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah. And I think that they'll probably sell a fair number of these. I think this is probably more interesting ultimately than the Razer PC console handheld thing that we
should
saw
try to get one in.
I put a call out yesterday. So.
Yeah, we haven't actually seen it in person, so we don't know size-wise.
I don't know how real
it is. Sound-wise.
Right.
It's for order right now.
Is it laptop components or is it desktop components
it's,
in there?
It's laptop graphics. Desktop components.
Okay. And what are they? Do they offer like a wireless keyboard and mouse with it or something?
They must.
Presumably, because you would need that. That's the whole point of it.
They absolutely must.
And I would assume also like a wireless Xbox controller probably built in.
I don't think that's
– No, I don't think – that's way. Proprietary. I don't think they can do that.
Well, they can put the dongle in.
They won't
give
the dongle.
They can probably do the – it would be nice to have it built in, but you're probably going to have a dongle.
Ugh.
Like
dongle
I have.
Sucks.
Yeah.
What can you have to hit that button.
Which leads me to reminds me that I got to go do the HDMI over Ethernet test because like you guys can do or Will can do the HDMI through the wall.
Well, what I really want though – is HDMI and USB over Ethernet. Well, that would be perfect for me.
And that's what I'm going to try.
Yeah.
So I'm going
to. We should get a couple of those things in and try them out.
Yeah, they're like $50 on Newegg, and I was get. A couple
just send me a list, and I'll buy them. And we'll get them.
My house is perfect to test that because I've wired Cat 5
Ethernet through the whole house. Yep. Now the thing is, you wouldn't plug those runs into your Switch.
I would. I would test.
No, you
them
can't do
the
them
Switch.
Across. It doesn't work over network. You'd have to run. You have to run. It's a direct run. It just uses the cable. It doesn't use Ethernet. Is my understanding. So you'd have to join the where your home run is, those two lines, and then you don't have Ethernet in those areas. We can talk about it.
F that.
This is a conversation to have later. This has just happened moments ago. The federal feds kicked in the doors at Mega Upload and shut down MegaUpload.com, charging its founders and others with violating piracy laws, according to the Associated Press.
Good.
Now, they're a U.S. company.
U.S. Mega company. Upload,
and it's one of those sites where you upload massive files. And it really, like when you talk about the guy who's in prison right now for sharing Wolverine, one of the sites that these people first host their movies on – the pirated movies is like a site like Mega Upload, and
I said before that you'll never really win the war in enforcement, but there are obviously certain places out there like Pirate Bay and like these guys Mega Upload, like that are basically just wholesale distributors of stolen material. Yes, by all means, kick in those doors, Elliot Ness style, and
while
here's
on paper, their intent isn't to distribute pirated material; it's to share large files. It was a shitty site to do that.
It was bad
because with all those ads, like it's one
PR
of those things
people.
Where you send the link and it's like 50 different buttons, and they're all ads except the one small button is to download the file,
and then you have to wait 45 seconds or get the premium account. I did have PR people send big presentations with Mega Upload for a while until SendShare and those kinds of guys got bigger. It's going to be an interesting test for the DMCA because Mega Upload has always been supposedly diligent about responding to DMCA requests. However, with no index of all the files on the site, I don't know how anybody would ever track down all the pirated material that's on there so they could send takedown notices. I'll be interested to see how this plays out in court.
There are many alternatives to Mega Upload for legitimate file sharing.
Cloudly.
A lot of those have limitations in terms of file sizes and bandwidth, and many of those you have to pay for if you want the fastest bandwidth. Mega Upload, you have to pay for.
Peer-to-peer file sharing is terrific, but what happens oftentimes with these kind of places is that they do make this kind of mealy-mouthed excuse that, but it's just hippy-dippy sharing. We don't condone illegality, illegal. We have a thing on our side. Please don't share illegal files. But they know what 90% of their traffic is really all about. And if you're going to set up a site like that, you have a responsibility to be responsible, to police it. And if you're not going to do it, then the real police are going to fucking show up.
As seems to be the case.
It
doesn't even have the – this has been taken down by the Federal Trade Commission logo yet on the site. So I'm sure that will probably get out later. Other stuff going on in the world today – John August was on a panel at CES. Mm-hmm. I wish I had known that this was happening because I would have gone and sat on this if I could have carved out the time.
Yeah.
John August is a screenwriter and a nerd. Mm-hmm.
He wrote Big Fish.
He wrote a bunch of great movies. He wrote Corpse Bride. He wrote Go, which is one of my favorite films.
Go is fantastic.
Yeah.
With what's her name and with, what's his name?
With Sarah Polley and Tim Olyphant. Yeah, yeah. A bunch of great actors.
It's one of the only good Pulp Fiction.
That was his first film that he wrote, and it was terrific. And he's written a bunch. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. He's written a bunch of stuff.
But he keeps a very popular blog about not only screenwriting, but about matters in in
tech
Hollywood.
And policy.
He has a great screenwriting podcast as well. So he's very active in the. Yes. He's actually one of these guys like me, but I think kind of on a higher level.
Okay.
That kind of occupies that nexus between a weird nexus between screenwriting and technology.
Nerds.
Yeah.
Okay. So you got to talk to him at CES, had dinner one night, I think.
Yeah, well, he was in town, unrelated, to talk on a panel about the convergence of how movies are made and marketed and how technology is, like, changing that. And I know John, he's a friend, so I said, I'm in Vegas as well, let's have dinner. So we had dinner, and he was telling me about he's making Big Fish into a Broadway musical right now, which is very interesting.
That's cool.
But what's interesting about John for this group of people, is that he's very active in technology as well. Like he builds apps and he builds iOS and Mac apps. He just released recently, for example, stuff that's useful for
screen. He develops them himself or he's working with other people?
No, he has people, but he's very savvy himself. Like his website, he knows HTML back and front and knows how to build like a pretty elaborate website.
He can take WordPress and make it awesome.
Yes, he's very good with WordPress and he has now people working for him that build apps. So for example, he built an app for the iPhone, which allows you to read screenplay files written in Final Draft. It was a very specific kind of file format, which otherwise was not previously available on mobile devices.
That's cool.
He recently wrote an app for the Mac, which allows you to create watermarks on your script. So when you, if you want to protect your document, it could be for any kind of document, put a big watermark across it. Let's say I want to distribute a file on paper to 10 different people.
Yeah.
But I want to discourage you to share it by blasting your name across every page.
Right.
So that I know if it leaked that was your copy.
Yeah.
I can type in 10 different names and it will spit out 10 copies of that document, each one with its own watermark.
Okay.
So these are useful things for people in our profession.
Yeah. Specific professional tools.
Yeah. But John also spends a lot of time thinking about stuff like digital distribution and, you know, ultraviolet. And that's what he was there to talk at CES about. And he post-CES wrote a very, I thought, very intelligent analysis of where we are right now with digital lockers and all this stuff.
So let's a little bit of background on the ultraviolet stuff and the DEC, which is, I think, the Digital Entertainment Coalition for Entertainment or something. I can't remember.
Consortium.
But three years ago now, I guess, 2009 or 2010 CES. I went and met with Mitch. Oh hell, I can't remember his last name. Mitch something or other, Sony's chief technical officer, who was leading up this DEC thing for a universal DRM standard. Because at the time, if you recall, you basically, when you got a digital copy with a DVD, then you had to choose whether you wanted the iTunes version, you wanted the one that worked on Sony devices, right, or you got the one that worked on Windows devices,
right,
everything else.
Right. And that kind of bifurcation is exactly what was holding it back.
No.
There's no kind of one-size-fits-all solution.
Well, it's one of the things that's holding it back.
Right.
We're still, for the most part, in that place now, but over the last 6 or 7 months, we've started seeing digital copies that use what's called ultraviolet.
This is the big new Hollywood play. God.
It launched. Green Lantern was the first movie that used it, and I think the Bosses movie. That
I think there's been more than that.
That was the first
horrible
movie.
Bosses.
Horrible there,
Bosses.
I think there are now several ultraviolet titles out there.
It's being spearheaded by Warner Brothers and Disney.
Sony is also involved. I believe.
Not everyone is on board. But at this conference, and the thing that John August picks apart in his blog post about this is the analogy that the executives at these studios say ultraviolet is like an ATM.
This is the analogy they made. Is if you know how to use an ATM, you should understand what ultraviolet is.
That is absolutely untrue.
As a digital locker service. Obviously untrue.
Yeah.
But this is what the executives say they believe.
But the analogy on the face of it seems quite clever. The idea that in principle it works the same way. You go to any turn. So instead you go to an ATM – in ultraviolet, you go to any computer terminal, anything that has internet access that could stream media, get authorized. So type in your PIN code at the ATM or type in your password on the ultraviolet website, and your locker is available. It's like Dropbox. Your locker is available there, and you can stream your media wherever you go.
Okay, so as part of my year-end, like one of my year-end rituals is to go, even though I'm probably not going to use any of them just because it's easier than ripping the Blu-ray or the DVD, I go through and look at all the discs I bought over the last year, and because those codes expire after a while, and I pull down the digital copies of the DRM-protected digital copies of most of the stuff that I bought that year. I did this at the end of the year, and I hit horrible bosses, and I think something else, both of which were ultraviolet protected discs. And the experience for downloading them was the shittiest experience I've ever had with a digital copy, bar none.
Oh, so you have actually tried to
do it.
Okay.
So on iOS, the solution is you download the Flixster app, which is a piece of shit app to begin with.
Oh, it relies on that?
On Flixster. You have a crazy like four-factor authentication thing where you have to keep typing in usernames and passwords in 6 different places.
Oh, my goodness.
And then you get a big list of what you can and can't do with the thing. And then it starts downloading the video at incredibly slow speeds.
This is where the ATM analogy falls apart. The ATM doesn't ask me to install a fucking plug-in. It just gives me my money.
Right. It's the shittiest ATM in the world.
Yeah.
And also the money that they give you, ATM, money is –
Money is money.
It's
fungible.
If the ATM thing's going to work, the ultraviolet interface presumably would need to be just like a completely seamless HTML5, something that works on anything. Any computer that's got the basic shit it needs to do things installed, it should work. Flixster? Come on.
As always, the implementation sucks because these companies don't know how to run it. And the cynical theory that John August posits at the end of his post is that the studios know this.
Yeah.
And the ultraviolet thing is something that they're doing now to just sell more DVDs because it's like a little value add. And in 5 years, it won't matter because it'll go away and some other standard will
come
up.
So it's a shell game. They're making it look like they're getting down with the streamings. But actually, they don't really want you doing it, so they've deliberately gimped it.
Harry Potter was one of the other ones. So it's Harry Potter and Horrible Bosses. I was trying to get copies of those because I actually wanted to watch Horrible Bosses on the plane. I hadn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to watch on an iPad because it's not a big action movie. Comedies work well in small screens, I think. And it ended up being easier to rip the Blu-ray than it was to get the ultraviolet copy to work because of the limitations, you know, the 10-minute cutoff for downloads and the fact that the download was so fucking slow. It was a complete waste of my time, and I put the disc in, ripped it, shrunk it down using Handbrake, and had a file that worked on the iPad and looked awesome in a fraction of the time.
But of course, Will, as far as like technology is concerned, you are the 1%. Most people are not don't know what Handbrake is. They're stuck with this whatever shit Hollywood gives them.
That's not true. To say that Digital Locker and streaming services don't work, because as we all know, HBO Go is a perfect example.
We know it can work.
It's not
great.
A Digital Locker.
It's not, but it could easily have been. I mean, if they.
But it could so easily be.
Oh, absolutely.
So you can store local content, right?
And all you need there is a decent browser with the correct shit installed.
Yeah.
Which, again, most computers you would go to would have the basics. They've got to make the barrier of entry technically very low
if they want to commit to it.
Well,
seriously.
I think John's point is probably right. I think that the shell game, after using this and seeing how spectacularly shitty it is, I don't understand why they pushed it out at the place it is right now. The Flickster app is bad. The download is awful. The experience as a whole is really, really terrible. When the download craps out because the app closes because you put it in the background for 10 minutes, you have to resuming it was a nightmare to figure out. It just – and I have good internet. I'm a technically savvy guy. The other thing that's happening is because most of the things that have the digital copies also have DVDs now for low-resolution devices like phones and tablets. Ripping DVDs is something that lots of people order of magnitude more people do than ripping Blu-rays.
So how does the mobile implementation of ultraviolet work? Is there a specific app you download for that as well?
Different for different platforms. So I don't know what the Android implementation is, but it's Flickster again on iPhone. You for iOS it is Flickster. There's no option to download it to your computer and then copy it over to the iPhone.
For those who are listening to the audio version, I'm just shaking my head.
Yeah. It's bad. It's an experience that literally people will try once and then be like, fuck this, and walk away.
But as Norm pointed out, that may be what they want.
Of course. Yeah. Keep buying discs, guys.
Yep.
Well, actually, what's going to happen is the easier option that costs the exact same thing is that they can go to the iTunes store or the Zune store or Google Movies, pay a buck, not get all the bullshit, don't steal our content, fake piracy warnings and all that shit at the start of the movie, forced view trailers, and then they get a much better experience on that.
When you say pay, you mean pay $5 to rent it.
They're pushing people toward iTunes and digital download services and away from physical media. If they don't –
Studios don't like iTunes though.
This is what I don't understand. If they don't want the digital download experience to be the default – then they have to fix the disc experience so that every part of that is better than the digital download experience. And they're not doing it.
Only image quality.
I mean, what else? Yeah, image quality is the one thing that they have. And as Laserdisc and Super Audio CD and digital DVD audio have shown, audio files and cinema files do not move markets.
Good enough is good enough.
Good enough is what people are going for. So it's the typical schizophrenic Hollywood response to a perceived threat where they're fucking it up by committee at such a high level that I'm flummoxed.
It's not the ATM analogy that's flawed. The analogy doesn't work because that's not actually what they're doing.
If I'd ever been kicked in the balls by an ATM, I would have the same experience I have with ultraviolet.
The whole reason why we like ATMs is they're easy to use and they don't give you any grief.
And they charge you
as opposed to streaming
visit.
Every streaming media solution we've seen so far, which is almost nothing but grief.
There's a Supreme Court ruling yesterday that's a little bit interesting, but not really super
applicable. The public domain thing.
Up until this point, when something enters the public domain, and the terms for that in the US are really confusing and very wildly based on the type of content it is, thanks in large part to Disney wanting to protect Snow White and early Mickey Mouse cartoons. Now the Supreme Court has said once something enters the public domain, it doesn't mean it can't be recopyrighted again. With congressional approval, the caveat to this is that it only applies to content that is still under copyright in foreign countries. So, for example, if France – New Zealand, say, has a different set of copyright expiration rules according to some treaty that nobody gives a shit about, then just because something's entered the public domain here doesn't mean that you can't modify that content in some way and then recopyright it to match the same terms as are available in the other countries. According to, I think it's the Berne Protocol or Berne Convention or something like that. This was one of those stories where the headline was really interesting. And then when you actually read it, it kind of gets weird and a little bit boring. So I'm just going to move on.
Everybody's all right.
Nodding off.
Yeah. Do you want the Microsoft thing?
Do we want to talk about the Microsoft stuff?
It's quickly, it's a funny bit. Microsoft now has achievements for developers.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's
really?
Not as big a story as everyone makes it be. It's a funny headline. In Visual Studio now, they're encouraging people to experiment with Visual Studio more by gamifying it. Sounds like such a dirty word.
It's filthy.
And giving developers achievements that they can unlock for increasingly complex code.
I hope Jane McGonigal's happy.
Yeah.
Look at what you've done.
Next.
Yep.
AT&T updated their data plans.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw the data plans, but I don't remember what they were like before. So did they get better or worse?
Context.
Yeah, Norm has
both
this.
Better and worse. Of course, got to preface this by saying whatever data plan you are on now, you can just keep it.
Right, you're always grandfathered in, which is good.
You don't have to opt. But if you do choose to opt for the new data plans, you can never go back.
Right. I get that. That's fair enough.
That's absolutely fair. And Verizon and AT&T have been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
The new data plan is, as opposed to the baseline being 200 megs for, I believe, $15.
It's now 300 megs.
It's now 300 megs for $20.
Okay.
So you're forced to buy more data. But as the bare minimum, forced to pay more bare minimum, but your price per megabyte is lower.
So and in a way, it's actually good. Leah actually just had to move off her. She had the 200 megabyte plan, and she was constantly going over it.
Yeah.
And the overages, I think, in a way, it's actually kind of consumer friendly because you're less likely to incur those big overages when you go over.
It is if that's your usage. If somehow over a wide study, we found that 300 megs is the right amount. Then that's right. If 200 megs was the right amount already and they're just charging, forcing people to pay more, then it's not
good. That plan actually could be good for someone like that because she was just going over 200 megs all the time. And I just said, for God's sake, like just go to the 2 gigs. I'll give you the extra $15 or whatever it costs. But I don't think she needs 2 gigs. So 300, whatever, if her overages are constantly like 50 or 60 gigs megs over, then that 300, the porridge could be just right.
They did the same for the 2 gigs. So now
it's three
the next
gigs
step
now?
Up is 3 gigs three for $30.
Gigs. Yeah. And which is actually a better deal than I get on Verizon now.
It's 2 gigs for $25?
2 gigs for $30. Verizon has a lot of great things going about it, but value is not one of them.
Mm. Well, you're also getting 4G for that, though.
No, he's not.
Well, technically, not on the iPhone.
Right, not on the iPhone. But when
you charge
you
extra for 4G.
Oh, yeah. Well, next year.
Well,
this year.
And then tablet data plans were also adjusted, so they're also increased.
Yeah.
3 gigs for $30 and 5 gigs for $50. Yeah.
So I like to bash AT&T a lot, but there's not. I don't hate these plans. They seem pretty reasonable.
Well, one of the things that they talked about last year was a multi-device plan, so you could pay an extra $10 and add your iPad to your data pool for your phone account or something like that. That's still in the works.
In the wind.
I air quoted that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It's unclear when that's happening. They're figuring that out.
What is good, though, is that a lot of people don't know this. It is very easy to check your usage over the course of a month.
Well, and I have to say, both AT&T and Verizon have been good about notifying me when I'm getting close to, if not limits, then to the top percentages that are going to get me in trouble.
Passive notifications plus easy apps and websites. Yeah.
They're actually great about that. And I think that I don't remember the facts, but there's either a law that recently passed or is in the works that will actually compel all wireless companies to do that.
I think that's absolutely required. For example, we used half of our monthly data allotment on the MiFi driving to Vegas with the live stream, 2.5 gigs.
Yeah.
And I got an email like pretty much right when we arrived in Vegas. It said, hey, you've used 2.5 gigs. You've used half. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the week, we used another 25%. I got another email. So
how much is the MiFi per month?
It was $50 a month for 5 gigs, $80 for 8 gigs.
Oh, my gosh. No,
$80 for
10. $50 a
month.
For
10.
That's not 80
for
10.
All. Oh, 80 for 10 or 80? Yeah, 8 is the break even, he said. He said if you're using 8 gigs a month, you go up to the 10 for $80. Because the overage is a $10 per gig.
Right.
It's still a lot of money per month if you don't rely on it.
Well, the point is, it's for people like Gary who spend a lot of time paying $20 a day or $10 a day for hotel internet. If you spend 5 days a month in the road, $10 a night for hotel internet. Totally
I love my MiFi. It's one of my favorite things that I've bought. Because you're not at the 3 things that I love about it. One is you're not at the mercy of bad hotel internet. Yeah. You take this thing with you, you're all good. Second is the idea of like having LTE wherever you go. I've got LTE in the car. I plug the thing into the power adapter in the car. Yeah. I've got a Wi-Fi cloud in the car. That's pretty magical.
Magic.
And so not only do I get faster downloads, but a lot of the things that I'm restricted on 3G, like downloading big podcasts or FaceTime or whatever, the phone thinks I'm on a Wi-Fi network, which technically I am. So that's good. And then the third one is as a stopgap when the power goes out.
Oh, that's nice.
It's nice to be able to, you know, we had a power outage in our area just recently for several hours. But fortunately, our MacBooks were completely charged, so the LTE was as well.
Thank goodness.
So we were fully functional just in the dark. It was pretty great.
Awesome.
And for people like me who've had – like I looked at getting a backup DSL line for my house, which would be $10 or $15 a month. I think if I have Wi-Fi problems or internet problems in the future that go out, look like they're going to go on for more than a day or two, I'm just going to go get a MiFi. Because with modern versions of GDWRT and Tomato, you can actually plug them into the USB port on your router and it will use the MiFi as your primary internet connection, which I think is super rad.
Yeah.
So that's AT&T's new data plans. Steam big screen updates. Rumors.
And by the way, just an adjunct in terms of using it as an emergency backup. Not just when the power goes out, but more often when your internet goes out.
Yeah, of course. At this point, I'd rather have it no gas than no internet.
And like I said, LTE when you're in a good area is so great that it's not even like a step down. Like it's as good as the internet you have at home.
Well, and even 3G, if you just want to check Twitter and email and, and browse the web a little bit, no video.
Yeah,
it's fine. Steam's big screen updates. This says check with Patrick next to it. I don't actually know what that is.
Is that the big picture mode?
The big picture mode.
Very excited about that.
Well, they've had that on their developer partner site for a long time, almost a year now, 9 months.
We never did find out what Valve's covert presence at CES was.
They weren't there. I talked to Doug.
Okay.
He said all that rumors, lies, and
innuendo. Oh, it was just rumors.
Dudes over to the Venetian, and they were not there.
They were on the official exhibitor list, so they may have pulled out at the last minute or something like that.
Got it.
Did you seem like it would be a missed opportunity for them to announce it with that Alienware laptop?
I don't think they need partners.
Well, they have had partners in the past.
I don't think they need partners
in
the future.
I don't think they need them now. But they have had partners where they've included Steam as part of every Dell PC sold, that kind of thing.
That was in the early days.
Yeah, well, they should preload it onto that Alienware console.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Could have been a great place to make an announcement if you're talking about console PC.
I would actually love to see a whole forked version of Windows 7. That is built around Steaming and gaming ecosystem. I mean, it's kind of crazy, but that would be cool.
I mean, the thing I would do is just have it launch straight into Steam. I mean, literally have the Windows machine auto launch Steam.
It's like a gaming Chromebook, but instead of the Chrome, you've got Steam.
Yeah.
Fucking why
Steam
not?
Book.
Yeah.
Steam Book. Yeah. What we saw in the Razer Hydra is kind of like Fiona with their front end that taps into Steam and
yes, I'd rather just have Steam though than their front end, frankly. Yes.
Well, I'll need Origin for Battlefield.
But you still want full functionality because if you want to be able to run like Ventrilo or go get patches, like you still want to be able to poke around a real OS.
Of course.
Well, that's the thing. All the gaming related software, when you talk about Ventrilo and on all the chat stuff, it would be smart of them to start designing big screen UIs now.
Well, this is what Windows 8, instead of Windows 8, right, you've got the super friendly, colorful Metro front end, which would be like your Steam front end, and then you can swipe that away if you need to drill down and like do more OS-y things, that's there too. But 90% of the time, all I'm seeing is the super friendly Xbox Live Steam type experience.
The thing for me is that I really don't want, what I want is gamepad control. Like when I fire up Battlefield, I still go into the office and sit down in front of the big monitor with the keyboard and mouse. I'm not actually playing that stuff on the big screen because I want a lean forward experience for multiplayer and a lean back experience for single player.
Mm-hmm.
And I put something like 70 hours into Skyrim now. I didn't even know that how I did that, but that game is perfect for couch play.
You can still have a lean back experience for multiplayer if it's like a racing game or something.
Maybe a racing game. Yeah.
Anything with a gamepad.
Trackmania.
Gamepad, lean back.
Yeah.
Keyboard, mouse, lean forward.
Yeah. That's definitely true. Let's see. I'm looking down the rest of this list. Anything else? So we've got CS TVs, 3D dead dying. 3D was still strong. They were still showing a lot of 3D, a lot of apps.
I would say 3D and apps were strong and present. Nothing about CS changed what we thought about those things.
The apps experience was still really bad. Yes. 3D is still up and down.
And less time from the press conferences and the announcements were devoted to these technologies.
So I was talking to my buddy Brian last night who runs the Wirecutter. About his TV recommendations because he wanted to know what my take on the TVs out of CES was. And I think our advice for people who are buying TVs is still the same. If you have If you don't have a 1080p set and you need to get a new TV this year, then the plasma is the best value per screen inch, I think.
You can buy an $1,800 amazing plasma TV. You don't even need 3D.
From Panasonic or Samsung.
Yep. Or yep.
If you really want an LCD, then the Sony and Samsung and LG are all quite good. Do not buy for 3D. Do not buy for apps. It seems like the 2K, 4K stuff is still far enough out that we're not going to really get that until realistically, for people who aren't going to spend $10,000, that's still a couple of years away. And that'll gradually come down as the panel sizes go up and the resolutions go up and the processes get better.
Mm-hmm. And remember, as you buy a more expensive TV and a TV with more cutting-edge technology, the peripheral costs increase as well in terms of the type of players you'll want, type of receiver you'll want, the calibration to optimize that, and the room you put it in.
Yeah, of course. Of course. But yeah, don't – the apps are dumb. Get apps in an external box. 3D is still pretty dumb. The glasses free stuff was very subtle and okay, but still not something I would ever turn on.
Well, Samsung earlier in 2011 said glasses free 3D was 5 years out, and I think it's less than 5 years out.
Yeah, I think they're wrong.
But it's not this year.
But the glasses free stuff that we saw that even is commercially available, like the Toshiba sets, are not they are full of compromises. So there are 9 viewing spots in the room, and if you're not in one of the right viewing spots, then it looks like when you're looking at a 3DS off axis.
Eye tracking only works with one person, that kind of stuff.
There's some other stuff. Oh, something I tweeted last night, Neil Gaiman's American Gods today is $2 for the 10th anniversary edition. A, I can't believe that book has been out for 10 years. B, it is one of my favorite books of, if not my favorite book of the 2000s. I think it's an absolutely brilliant book and everybody should read it. So
$2.
$2 on Nook and Kindle. And I think maybe iBooks too, but I'm not sure about that. So regardless of your ebook reading platform of choice, you can get that. And I highly endorse it.
All right.
Windows 8 tablet minimum requirements released. You want to talk about this, Norm?
Yeah, it wasn't a real release. It was a reveal. Read the story on the site. I don't want to talk about it really.
Yeah, it's on the site. Okay.
I do want to talk about Liquipel, and I think waterproofing technologies are going to be super hot this year.
I was amazed by this.
Yeah. So leaving CES, CES really doesn't have an impact on the vast majority of people.
It's for us,
and even for people who are interested in technology. The big thing that changed is we got a lot of walking done. We got more walking
done. Yeah, I walked
done
24 miles
than we
last
did,
week, according to
and we've done in months. And also, everyone got sick.
Yeah, I think that's how I actually lost weight in Vegas. Even though I was eating like Robert Baratheon, yeah. I somehow lost weight in Vegas because you walk around so much.
Is that how you say that, Baratheon?
Baratheon.
However you want to say.
I'm not watching the show. I didn't like the book.
Wow. When, okay.
I mean,
one of the things about watching the TV show is that you discover that lots of names are pronounced differently than the way you had them in your head when you were reading the book.
They had to have really interesting conversations about that as they were getting ready to shoot that.
Well, no, I think they just asked George Martin.
Of course he knows.
Do I think George Martin knows how to pronounce the names of his characters? Yes.
I wonder.
I don't.
Okay. When you write a character with a weird name, you know how to pronounce it?
Of course.
Okay. The name comes up in your head first and then the spelling comes out after that, right? I want to put some letters together and how would you spell that?
Okay, fair enough.
Anyway, come out of CES, we all got a lot of exercise. We're all dirt tired and some of us sick. Our views on technology mostly didn't change.
Ultrabooks. I'm much stronger on ultrabooks than I was before.
Love ultrabooks.
You're confident in Intel's ability to market them, you mean? Not so much the actual form factor, because we were sold on that last year.
Well, one of the things I like is that they're marketing them in the marketing campaign. I can't believe we're talking about marketing campaigns on this podcast. I hate doing this. The thing that they're doing is they've learned the Apple lesson and they're not marketing speeds and feeds. The marketing campaign for ultrabooks is really explicitly about how you use the computer. Not the consumer experience.
And also, I mean, they're comparing it to Centrino. Centrino was kind of
in
ambiguous.
Terms of spend.
In terms, yeah, exactly. Centrino was one of the last big marketing.
Dude, they've said that every time.
Right. This makes more sense because Centrino denoted no experience. It was just processor plus their chipset. This actually is way.
Well, the experience for Centrino is really no wires. The internet over the ether. They said that about every big marketing campaign they've done since Centrino. They said that about Core. They said that about Core i7. They've all of those have been – this is the biggest push we've had since Centrino. So whatever. Adam. This they said it for Adam.
Oh, God. Adam.
Yeah.
Netbooks. Anyway, one other thing that came out of CES and I think it'll be big this year is waterproofing and its materials. Three companies are doing this, and Westworld Story, it's on the site right now. I recommend you read that. We saw Liquipel. We didn't see the other ones.
It's a big show.
It's actually something that's been in phones before, like the Razer, the Motorola Razer, the new one, has their splash guard technology on the back of the phone. So not doesn't encompass the entire phone, but it's water resistant, has the same type of nano coating. I think the Liquipel is the only company that's selling directly to consumers, and we're definitely going to test that out. I'm going to send one of our iPhones to get Liquipelled.
Okay. Waterproofed.
Waterproofed. And the other ones are going directly to OEMs, working with the Samsungs and hopefully the Apples. I could imagine at the end of the year, Apple coming out with their iPhone 5 and making a big deal out of this.
You want to see this just built into the product.
Right, we've locked down the technology and with the patents and made deals, and so your next iPhone can drop in water.
Is Tim Cook going to stand on the stage with a fake toilet and drop the phone in the toilet and pull out, look, it still works?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the technology is amazing, but it's a very amazing solution to not a very widespread problem. I mean, how often do you really
the water deaths of phones is one of the leading causes of smartphone death.
What do you think the percentage of that is compared to drop? Deaths.
I have no idea.
I think percentage-wise, maybe not so much. But
for non-iPhones
– how big a deal people make of it and how much of an inconvenience that is, because there was a lot of controversy. Like sweat could get into the sensors like that. People will be happy about it.
Hey, and it's a plus. It's like I would be terrified to use my iPhone in the bath.
Yeah.
But hey, now fuck it. And now I'm using my iPhone in the bathtub. And if I drop it, it's big deal.
I'm going to send my Kindle in, get it Liquipelled, and then I have ebook reading in the tub. Everybody wins.
So the other company is called HZ0 or something. And I don't want to go too much into technology because, one, I don't fully understand it. And, two, it's very boring.
It's
material science, yeah. But it's really funny. If you go to the marketing sites, the About Me page for this HZ0 site, you got to read this first paragraph.
Do you want me to read it?
I don't know if I want to read it.
Okay.
Basically, talk about usually it's quite – odd. They say, several years ago, a maritime student working on a barge in the Mississippi River accidentally fell overboard. And there's this long story about...
This sounds like something from a J. Peterman catalog.
Yeah, exactly. He held onto the line in the water for about a half hour while he tried to communicate with the bridge. Despite desperate for help, he frantically tried calling for help using a cell phone, which was rendered useless the moment it hit the water.
Right.
When that didn't work, the student pulled out a standard issue radio for maritime servicemen, which met the same fate as a cell phone. Unable to call for help, he was crushed to death between the barge and the gate to the lock on the river, leaving behind a distraught wife and two small children.
If he was crushed to death in the water, how do they know that he did these things?
They could
trying
see him.
Find
him.
Okay.
If they could see him, why didn't they toss him a ring?
Or why didn't he just let go?
This is a terrible story.
I'm kind of disappointed to learn that maritime issue radios are not waterproof.
Me too.
You think that would be on the top of the list?
So this is a horrific story. And then next paragraph, out of this tragedy was born the commitment to develop technology that was impenetrable by water.
All right. So his death was not in vain.
That's right.
Okay.
So that's the use case.
So
this story is terrible.
It is terrible.
I don't want to finish the podcast now. Thanks,
Chad. So a man dies and leaves his family and kids orphaned and widowed.
Yep.
But I can use my iPhone in the tub.
There you go. That's the summary.
High five.
Internet high five.
Okay, I'm moving on to something else. I don't want to talk this about it anymore. Memory, all the rest of this stuff, don't care about. AMD announces Thunderbolt competitor. I saw this running at CES. I thought it was a markedly low-budge, uninspiring demo.
Well, they're calling it Lightning Bolt.
It's a dumb name.
Really? They're not even trying.
No, they thought they were being clever.
And it's USB 3.
I can assure them that they are not.
Yes. So it's designed for low-end PCs.
Yeah.
It does not have the...
They should have called it Lightfoot. That would have been badass.
That was a code name for...
Lightfoot?
Yeah, Thunderbolt and Lightfoot. Oh, you're too young.
Yeah. I don't encourage this. It's external USB. It's like super USB over display port.
Yes, it's display port
and
USB
3.
Not
PCI Express over display port.
You don't reach maximum speeds of USB 3.
Yeah, I don't I felt like this was a wasted effort on their part. I you know, this like the thing to do if they want to add Thunderbolt to their machines, which I guess probably isn't going to happen because the cost of the Thunderbolt chips is very high. They should just buy the Thunderbolt chips that Intel sells to everyone and put them on the board.
What I would love if they, I don't know what the through speeds are like, if this is even doable, but I would love it. And this would be actually great for Mac gaming, is if I could buy an external super powered video card and just have it sit there like an external hard drive, but have that power my graphics.
Now, MSI about, showed that.
Without having to worry about opening it up or worrying about if my ports are big enough or whatever, it would just be external.
It's happening. Well,
but the cable's got to be good enough to support that.
Well, the problem right now is that Thunderbolt, which depending on the configuration, in the MacBook Pros is four PCI Express lanes, I think. In the MacBook Airs, it's only two PCI Express lanes. Doesn't quite provide enough bandwidth between the host and the video card for that to work.
That would basically revolutionize Macs as gaming machines. They would suddenly be viable overnight.
If you could get an eight lane PCI Express 16. Chip. Well, 16 is what you have in desktops. From talking to the graphics guys, they're not maximizing that bandwidth. Yeah. I mean, you could make do, especially at the resolutions you'd probably play games with on the MacBook, with a eight or even maybe a four way.
What do you even put in a two lane PCI Express for? I mean, aside from Ethernet
and
sound
storage.
Cards.
That's it. RAID array.
Yeah.
What I mean, can we imagine a world? Can we imagine a world where I buy where the technology is fucking crazy, and I buy a video card, a high end, mega powered NVIDIA or AMD whatever video card that just sits there somewhere in my house and wirelessly powers anything that I want to game on? Is that ridiculous?
That's ridiculous.
Is it?
Orders of magnitude of bandwidth between PCI Express lanes and even 802.11 AC, the new Wi-Fi.
So even like in Star Trek, I'm not going to be able to do that.
Wires are always better.
Okay.
Unless there's some sort of quantum tunnel from point A to point B and you're bypassing space and time, which case anything's
possible. And who are you to say that that's not going to be possible?
I'm not saying that's not possible.
All right.
I don't think it's...
We have developed wormhole technology and we're going to use
it. Better graphics in our video games.
On my MacBook Air.
Finally. Priority one, I can finally turn on anti-aliasing.
Yeah.
It's not even better graphics. It's that I don't have to plug my MacBook in to play games on it.
Yeah.
Fuck cables. Quantum tunneling.
Quantum power, quantum graphics.
Go register quantum power right now.
Get it done.
Okay, other things I don't care about. I think that's it.
All right.
Do we want to talk about Waz's comments? It just says Waz's comments about, and then I must have shut the
document down. Oh, the Fandroids were fucking having fits of ecstasy over this. Waz apparently said something like, Android phones are better at doing some things than Apple phones are.
Yeah, that's, course, everybody agrees with that.
The Android guys just went nuts.
I'm going to play some music, and then we'll do something else. Talk about what we've been testing, I guess.
All right.
Wow, there is a... So I put in places to start and stop adding.
Yep.
And people completely ignored the point of that, which was
No, at the bottom it says stop adding here. They added subsections.
Yeah, other...
They took the initiative.
I guess that's good. That is good. What we've been testing, CS Gear, we're going to talk about this in the show, but the GorillaPod, the big GorillaPod with the swivel ball head that we use right here in the live stream for the podcast.
Logitech C615.
I bought a couple of $22 to $25 iPhone lenses from like weird white box manufacturers.
Well, PhotoJoJo sells them. Some of the Amazon ones have had very poor reviews because my friend was looking actually at this. Compared to the
PhotoJoJo?
PhotoJoJo ones, just because of shipping time and the quality of the lenses on the Amazon. Be very wary of buying them.
So I went, there were only two lenses on Amazon that had Prime and didn't have a whole shitload of negative reviews. Those are the ones I got.
I thought they were good. I like the way they just snap on with a little magnetic ring. It's great.
One of the things that's bad about them is that if you get the wrong ones and the magnetic rings don't stay on the phone very well.
Yes.
Some of them also had silver colored magnetic rings versus black colored magnetic rings.
And keep in mind, one of the big plates is the magnetic rings. And we even quickly looked.
Well, you've got one right there on your case.
On the case, much better than on the phone because it blocks the flash.
Right. Yeah. Oh,
Some of the rings that we have actually have a notch so that it doesn't block the flash.
So look for the right ones.
Let's see. Other stuff that we use, I got a 300-watt power inverter so we could plug in a MacBook Air as well as a couple of phone chargers and stuff like that.
That van was pimped out.
Command station, three rows, high tech.
Yeah,
and you sat right in the middle.
There was nothing we couldn't do. We had an abundance of outlets.
You had the Kirk seat.
You should have been driving.
No, no. You were driving, and I was managing comms.
Oh, so you were Uhura? Chekhov?
That would make you Uhura.
Yeah, you want to be Chekhov.
I want to be Chekhov.
Wes was Uhura.
No, you would be Chekhov because Chekhov drives the ship.
No, Sulu drives the ship.
No, Sulu fires the phasers.
And drives the phaser. Sulu has the best job. He gets to shoot stuff and go faster.
Mm.
Remember in the J.J. Abrams Star Trek,
we moved the levers. We had an analogy. And all we
I thought it was more interesting when we were figuring out which members of the A-team we were going to be.
Oh, yeah.
I liked that.
So I was
very pleased with the way it shook out. I actually thought it was fair to all involved, and I got the one that I wanted, so everyone was happy.
You wanted to be Murdoch.
I wanted to be Howling Mad Murdoch.
Yeah.
And I got to be Murdoch.
Yeah.
Just by process of elimination.
I can't figure out why. It was the one that was left over, so I took it.
Yeah.
And I was very happy because
Also, you can fly helicopters.
I was a kid, I loved the A-Team. It was one of my favorite TV shows, and Murdoch was my favorite character. And I actually got beat up a few times at school. This would probably make
because
my,
of your Howling
my
Mad
previous
state.
Stories about being bullied at school that we played very sympathetically a few weeks ago probably like take some of that off now because I really did ask for it. I pretended to be Murdoch in school a lot and I got the shit beat out of me for it, but it was worth it. So I was very glad that it all came back around. I got to be Murdoch.
I forgot who was Will.
Well, of course, it was Hannibal.
Hannibal Luck. Yeah.
All right.
John Hannibal Smith, of course. Yeah. He's the leader. He's the one with the plan.
Right. Well, always a plan. And yeah, a good plan. I love it when a plan comes together.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, I chew on a cigar occasionally.
Yeah.
Were you Face Man?
He wasn't Face Man.
No, I think I think
Braga was Face Man.
Was Braga Face Man or was Drew Face
Man? No, Joey was Face Man.
Joey is the Face Man.
Yeah, Joey is the
Joey,
Face Man.
Yeah.
Temple of Peck.
Joey just opens the door. Yeah. Oh, Joey opens doors everywhere he goes.
But we're saying that because, you know, he's good looking.
Yeah.
Like Face Man
he's also
is.
Glib.
But the thing is, the Face Man's real skill was he was a scammer. He was the guy that could get you things. He was a con man. I don't know if that's
he was materials.
Joey. Yeah.
No, Joey. The thing about Joey is he uses his superpower is that he walks up to people and they just do whatever he asks. It's like John.
Well,
Hamm,
that's okay. That's Face Man because his looks were a big Face Man.
You don't want to say no to Joey. You don't want to make Joey frown.
You just exude confidence.
No, Joey's a prince of a man.
Yeah.
Norm, I guess that means Norm was BA.
Norm was BA.
Yeah, he doesn't like flying.
Doesn't like to fly.
He's good with mechanical stuff.
And that's the thing is that BA was the muscle, but he was also the mechanic, the engineer.
Yeah, yeah.
He was the guy that
fixed the
ship. Muscle, all of you.
And so that's
Norm's been working out,
and also a bit cranky from time to time.
All of these things are true about Norm.
Bad
as well.
Bad BA. Don't forget, stood for bad attitude.
Novel haircut.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. And you know, great fashion sense.
And then I think we decided that Matt was the legit side.
There's no one left.
The lady.
Amy.
Amy, yeah.
Who they kind of got rid of later on, but she was, people forget this. In the first season of the A-Team, she was one of the A-Team. When Hannibal introduced them, he would introduce her as one of the members of the A-Team. And then later on, I guess they decided they would rather have like interchangeable women going
disposable
on.
Women.
So they kind of got rid of Amy, which was sad.
That's unfortunate. Poor Amy.
And then they ended up all working for Robert Vaughn, that's when the show started to suck.
Oh, interesting. I stopped watching by then, I guess.
But you did it right.
Okay. So, lenses, the tripod, the inverter. Streamed most of the show from your MacBook Air. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
We're forgetting anything?
A lot of jerky. We bought way too much jerky.
Yeah. The cheap jerky is to be avoided. Nobody wants oranges. We should have bought clementines. Easy to open.
Oranges are easy to open.
All those blood oranges.
Hands.
Nobody wanted blood oranges.
And I tell you what, this wasn't on this trip, but it certainly was a part of it. Is that, you know, for a long time, I've always thought the whole sweet and savory thing is weird, like sausages and pancakes together. I would have those separately. Fruit and nut. Got a good handful of fruit and nuts.
You love nuts.
Salted nuts and dried fruit, a good handful of that. Really, just great. Great combination.
Smokehouse almonds. Yeah.
Oh, I love those almonds. Those blue diamond almonds are just the
and
best.
The best part about that was we were driving through some of the largest almond farms in the country as we were eating the almonds.
And you know, your pro tip of if you got a peach, eat a couple almonds, pop some almonds.
Yeah, pop some almonds.
It goes away.
Oh, I didn't know
that. Sucks the moisture
that.
Out.
Huh.
Yeah.
It doesn't work at all.
The only thing I like better than those almonds are salt and pepper cashews.
Oh, I like a salt and pepper cashew.
I love a good cashew.
Let's see, other stuff we were testing, the Ultrabook, of course, video for that will go up, I think, tomorrow or Monday. I'm not sure exactly when that's going up. We tested out, well, basically during Intel's press conference at CES, they did the, hey, and if you check under your seat, there might be an Ultrabook there just for you.
Were you hoping for an Oprah moment? Oh, everyone got one?
Well, no, they gave away 50, I think. So they gave away 50 two-month loaners to press. And I spent some time with it last week. I'm really convinced about the hardware. The hardware is really solid and really amazing. That particular model has bad trackpad and bad keyboard, which are super deal breakers.
Yeah, but they are doing a good job of making them sexy. They're usually when Apple comes in with something, like be it a phone or a tablet, and then people try to copy it.
Yeah.
Like remember when they basically did the all-in-one with the iMac, and then suddenly there were a bunch of all-in-one PCs, but none of them really looked that good. With the Ultrabooks, I actually think they've done a good job of making them quite sexy.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Gary, are you not on the Nano Watch anymore?
Not today. I like to change it up.
Okay. But your experience so far has been very positive.
I've really enjoyed it. I posted a picture of my watch the other day. It was charging. It just looks weird, the idea of a wristwatch that's got like an iPod charger going into it.
That's one of the things that breaks the whole smart wristwatch thing for me is the good part about having a wristwatch is you don't have to fuck with it every day.
But it's not every day. If you just use it, I mean, if you're using it for like heavy music use, but I don't. I just use it as a watch.
Yeah.
I have charged it. I've had it now for a couple of weeks. I think I've charged it once.
Does the Nano work with Bluetooth headphones?
No. Maybe the next one. That would be a good idea. That would be very smart. Because I got a good strap for it. Actually, look, it doesn't. You know, remember the first generation. People started homebrewing those straps.
When Norm just taped it to his arm.
Yeah, it looks silly. But now you can actually get straps for it that really do make it look like a legitimate, like a real watch. Great conversation piece as well. So many people in Vegas asked me about it.
Hmm. Yours is silver, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, good color for that.
Yeah, I wanted to get a neutral color because I didn't put any kind of band on it. Yeah,
you don't want orange.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago on Fab, they had these Swipe Gear iPod friendly gloves. I've been writing Bart a lot lately, so when it gets cold, I kind of want a pair of gloves, but I also like to be able to use my phone and read and stuff like that on it while I'm on the train. And what they have is a capacitive touch friendly surface on the tips of the fingers and the thumb, so you can actually use your phone and type the whole nine yards.
I bought Leah some last year when it was cold. Yeah,
fantastic buy. And there's a quick ones of them coming up soon.
It's
too.
It's pretty cold in San Francisco right now as well, so it's a good time for them.
30 degrees this morning. I had frost 2 days this week. It's never happened since we moved into this house.
People like in Seattle and on the East Coast right now going, fuck you guys.
Well, it's all about expectations with climate. So you know, Northern California, you expect it to always be cold, but never freezing. Freezing is novel. And
freezing is rare for the Bay Area.
When we get close to freezing, shit starts to go crazy around here. So,
yeah.
The Cogetto Dock. Cogetto.
Dot. The video went up yesterday, so we talked about this at length on the show floor.
Yeah. I loved it so much in the car on the drive back. I was really blown away by it. I was actually really surprised and disappointed to hear that you subsequently did not really like it.
So it's not very good.
It's one of those things, it looked great in their demo, but once you actually spent some time with it and tried to shoot
video
with it.
Is it the focus issue?
A couple things. So there's the focus issue, and we alluded to this
earlier.
Explain
what this is first for people who don't know.
It's an iPhone case that you attach to the back of your iPhone and has a panoramic lens.
Like a bulbous eye.
Yes, where it warps the image so you can shoot 360 panoramas, not of images, but of video.
So have you ever seen like a QuickTime VR where you can pan around a whole image, but it's video.
But it's playing
amazing.
Video. Conceptually, very cool. Implementation, not so great. So we actually tried shooting a video on the drive back at the
dinosaur video.
Yeah.
And we shot a great little video. Played it back, completely out of focus.
I mean, when you first, you know, swipe around the screen and realize that you can rotate the camera in real time, it's kind of mind-blowing, but it's offset by the fact that, the image is nowhere near in focus.
Yeah.
So I did some experimenting yesterday with that after you were done with it. I found that the focus issues were better if you shrank and expanded the size of the ring, the donut. And then tap to focus once you get started shooting, still not very good.
The thing is, once you focus, you can't see what you're shooting once the video starts.
Right.
Because your phone is actually face down.
Well, and the thing is, how does it really know what to focus when the image is being kind of refracted through 360 degrees and there's all kinds of different depths of field?
Exactly. So there are optimal situations. Even the best case of video that we shot, didn't look that great. Also, the housing around the lens is plastic, which is prone to getting scuffed, and there's a lot of glare.
Well, it picked up weird reflections because of whatever reason. I've actually ordered another one. There's another similar product from a company called Pano.
So I checked the other one. There is another product, like Will said. That one, you can actually check the video as it's recording because it sticks up.
It uses like a periscope.
But the example for that one, the videos look much more distorted.
Oh, weird.
They don't pan as well. I still think it's a very novel technology. And like Vinny,
it's a terrific idea.
We had this long discussion like, what if people start shooting movies this way with professional cameras?
Terrible idea.
The idea that you could have a different type of experience.
I can see some very interesting experimental films coming.
Exactly. Experimental films, yes.
That's what I'm
saying. I don't want choose your own adventure when I'm watching a movie. I want a cinematographer to direct the view of what I'm seeing.
IMAX, right? The appeal of IMAX not only is that you get better image quality, but for the scenes that are nicely shot and where the pan works, you get to move your head around, move your eyes around. You could see a bigger scene. That's why that 8K TV was so cool. I could see, obviously you would need a display, but a 360 type video where the director wrote the story in a way where you could see different conversations, things going on. It'd be a unique experience.
Well, I mean, you remember EA's old booth at E3 where they had the big giant theater in the round.
Yes.
And while that was really cool, it was also really confusing because you never knew where to look. And you're constantly kind of just standing in the middle of this room and everybody was just kind of twirling as stuff would move around the screen. Let's see. Other stuff we've been testing. The Sony Bloggy Live, that quick look went up while we were at CES. Obviously, we teleported back to San Francisco on Monday to shoot that quick look. And then back to Vegas. What did you think of that thing, Norm?
Don't buy it. $250, way too much. The Wi-Fi implementation sucks.
It's slow.
Uploading to YouTube is sure convenient, but you can do that on your iPhone. Image quality is great, but live streaming using Quick, which is the service they partnered with, is no good.
It's another great example, though, of again, how the dedicated camera guys are realizing that the real threat is coming from phones and the ability to instantly put stuff up on the internet.
Which is why the companies that are having success in the dedicated camera market are the GoPros, where ruggedized cameras and they're
specialized.
And their business is really about selling mounts.
Yeah.
Mounts for anything.
Yeah.
Right.
You can hook those things onto surfboards and skis and bikes and dogs and helicopters and everything. Gary, you had something you wanted to talk to us about testing.
Did I?
You said that at the beginning that I didn't put on the list.
Oh, by the way, did you want to talk about Kodak?
Oh, we didn't talk about Kodak. It was on the list and I completely forgot about it. Let's do that after this and we'll just jump
in. It's not super exciting, but I've been looking for a solution for a music dock for my iPhone/iPod.
Okay.
Because I potter around in the kitchen a lot.
Yeah.
And the choices in the kitchen are either, just run the, if you want to listen to music or whatever, or Sirius Radio, whatever you've got on your phone.
Uh-huh.
The speaker on the iPhone 4S is pretty good. It's improved over the 4.
It's like a transistor radio.
Still very tinny.
Yeah.
Or I've got music coming from the TV in the living room, but again, it's not ideal. Leah actually discovered, or she knew a great trick that she turned me on to. Short of buying a special thing, if you just want to very quickly homebrew improve your sound, just plonk your iPhone into a bowl.
Oh,
and it will create an acoustic, kind of a natural amplifier.
That's crazy.
It makes it slightly better. Yeah, we just threw it in the kind of bowl that you would like beat eggs in. Just
like a mixing bowl?
Yeah, like a glass mixing bowl. Toss it in there and it creates an echo chamber. It's better. It's not brilliant, but it's better than nothing.
Okay, we'll cupping the speaker.
So that's something for you to try at home.
Yeah, we'll test that out.
I was wandering around Target the other day and I inadvertently wandered down that, one of those aisles. And I'm like, I've been looking for one of these. Let me see what they have. And there was the Bose ones, which are like $300, $400. I don't need to spend that kind of money. It's crazy. And then, all the really cheap ones. And with these docks, it's often weird because you don't know which iPhone they're really compatible with. Like there was a couple I was interested in. I went on to ShopSavvy, which is that app you recommended.
Of the year, yeah.
Brilliant app. Scanned a couple of barcodes, pulled up the review. It's just amazing you can research stuff like right on the ground now. Boom, boom, boom. Get a bunch of reviews, get information. So a couple that I thought looked good. Realized that were built for the 3GS. They weren't,
They're not compatible with the new dock.
Weren't compatible with the new dock. There's a couple that, maybe don't have great sound quality and other things you should be aware of. Some wipe out the airplane mode. So it's great for playing the music that's stored on the phone, but I couldn't say stream Pandora through it because it's killing my connection. And then I eventually found one from a company I'd never heard of before called Sound Freak, I think it's Freak with a Q. It's one of those obnoxious
names. Is it two E's or an EA?
No, it's just Freak, but it's a Q at the end.
It's terrible.
And it's called the Sound Step. And it's very low profile. It just looks like a little black slab with some buttons on the front. And it's brilliant because it has all these things in it that are really cool. So it docks really easily. It doesn't kill airplane mode, so I can stream. I like to listen.
Right.
So
it doesn't require airplane
mode. If I want to listen to Howard Stern in the kitchen, I can because the Wi-Fi connection is just fine. It also has Bluetooth.
Okay.
So I can you could stream from the phone or from a MacBook, anything else you've
got. Oh, like HTTP.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it streams audio from anything. It's got a pairing button right there on the front. It's also big enough that you can put an iPad right into it as well.
Oh,
so you can stream from your iPad. It also charges the phone, obviously. So that's I just dock it there now just to, even if I'm not listening to me, I just throw it in the kitchen. That's where I always know where it is. Has a little remote. Again, very low profile, so it's no hassle. And even has a little FM radio that you download an app that goes with the thing, and you can tune the FM radio. It's great.
Is this something you could mount up underneath your cabinet, do you think, or not so much?
I don't know if it's intended for that, but it's very sleek. It's just very sleek and angular. It's not obnoxious like a lot of these docks. Very low profile. Yeah. Sits next to the stove in the kitchen on the countertop, and you wouldn't even know it was there. But it's great. And the sound quality is actually really good. So
I wish that Apple – I guess you can do this with Airport Expresses still, but I wish that there was something you could use for like in-wall installation for AirPlay streaming similar to Sonos, but without having to use the Sonos app and have that whole ecosystem set up.
Sonos is expensive and
– you have to really invest. Yeah. And probably have to have a professional installer come out if you want to do like in-ceiling speakers and that kind of thing.
But I love this little dock. You can probably Google it. It's called the Sound Freak Sound Step. I found it at Target. Amazon has it.
Sounds like okay.
$129.
Oh, that's a lot.
Not compared to the ones.
Well, not compared to the B&Ws or the Bose.
That's actually at the low end. I mean, you can get one like a Philips or a Logitech one for like $60.
Yeah.
But you're going to get what you pay for.
Yeah.
Tinny sound and probably other things. For the price,
yeah.
Really love it. I would recommend it.
Okay. Gary would have recommended. That'll do it for what we've been testing, unless you have anything else, Norm.
No, is that it?
Yeah. Let's jump back. Let's talk about Kodak for a sec. Filed for Chapter 11. I think the best thing I've read about that so far was the Economist piece about Fuji, about the different paths that Fuji and Kodak took. Both were massive film companies, huge investment in that infrastructure. Fuji really leaned hard into digital early on. Kodak lagged intentionally. They didn't want to cannibalize their film business. Kodak is going away now, and Fuji is stronger than ever before.
Do you think anyone's going to at least buy the brand name, or is it just going to disappear?
I've heard that the patent portfolio isn't that good.
It's a shame, though, because when it comes to cameras, Kodak is, I mean, it's just synonymous with photography.
Yeah, until I was probably 16 or 17 years old and saw my first roll of Fuji when I was on the school newspaper, I don't think I realized that other people made film except for Kodak.
Yeah, I mean, back in the day, their marketing, the whole idea of a Kodak moment, I mean, that really entered the popular consciousness. That was a whole thing.
So schmaltzy. Don't miss your baby's first step. It's a Kodak moment. Capture that or you'll regret it.
I mean, that's like some Don Draper type shit.
Yeah. Well, it is Don Draper type shit.
Yeah.
I remember my uncle, who's a professional photographer and illustrator. We used to live in San Diego, and we would go to the San Diego Zoo, which was one of the great zoos of North America. And they had these Kodak picture spots or photo spots. I can't remember what it was.
Right.
Strewn all over the zoo. And we collectively thought that the idea that Kodak was marketing so heavily that they would put signs at places that you might like to take a memorable photo was so funny that we actually just took photos of us standing next to the sign throughout the parks. So we have this entire trip to the zoo, no pictures of animals, no pictures of us looking at giraffes or any shit like that. Just us standing by all these Kodak photo spot signs.
Wow, that's very hipster.
I thought but this was 86.
Norm agrees.
I agree. I wouldn't do that.
Before hipsters were invented.
That's very ironic.
He's an ironic kind of dude. But yeah, so that was indelibly burned into my memory. But it used to be that you went to many tourist attractions throughout the country and they had paid to place signs that said, hey, you should get your picture taken here. Kodak says it's a good place to have a picture taken.
Yeah. It's sad.
Harry McCracken last night on Twitter when we were talking about this said, Kodak along with Coca-Cola is one of the best marketed brands in modern advertising history.
Yeah.
And I think did Coke have a Paul Simon song written about it? No.
No. I mean, and absolutely. And it just goes to show that even the most, embedded brands in the consciousness, you know, eventually if you don't move with the times, you're going to get wiped
out. Well, inflection, there's all these – anytime there's an inflection point in a massive market like that, then anything can happen.
Look at the Walkman.
Yeah.
That's probably the best example I can think of.
And they're bringing it back, the brand.
Sony imploded. Motorola, with the transition from smartphone, feature phones to smartphones, went from being market leader. And Nokia, same story, actually, and you know, is now just now starting to claw back.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's and of course, PC was a microcosm for all of this with the transition from 2D to 3D. We saw completely different companies making graphics cards after that. Yeah.
Did you know that Jacuzzi is a brand name?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Huh. Yeah, but they fucked up.
Yeah.
Well, they
Kleenex, Jacuzzi, all that stuff.
Kleenex, Jacuzzi, Band-Aid, Hoover, all the things that you just, you know, think of.
Hoover, really?
Hoover.
Oh, well, in England, that is. Like, Hoover is a verb. It's like, I need to do the hoovering.
Yeah, well, when the dog...
Not so much here.
When the dog... I don't know if Huey does it. Huey's probably a better behaved dog than Chloe, but when Chloe... detects crumbs on your shirt or lap.
Oh,
we call that hoovering.
Well, she does
the flying leap into your lap.
Amazingly, if I drop something on the floor, I say, Huey, Hoover, and he's out there like a shot. He knows that something's on the floor.
Oh, see, Chloe hears the sound. She can hear the slightest bit of food hit the floor, and it's just boom, like
her
a
radar
rocket.
Is even more finely calibrated.
Well, she has enormous ears,
right.
It helps. I'm gonna play some music, which I my finger slipped.
Smooth move, Ferguson.
My finger slipped. Nice.
Interrupting yourself, too.
Yes, exactly.
As well.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Perfect timing. Thing.
Wait, hold on.
Perry, that is an enormous box.
This is really shaping up to be a podcast for the ages.
Oh, yeah. Just put that in your chair. This is going to be a great segment
We'll get to that. Let's let that loom.
Oh,
there.
You're going to let that age?
Just let it ferment.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Don't let it throw you off course.
I'm so excited.
Wow. This is really a good podcast. Yeah, so we came back to start with
I'm so excited. This is the question segment. If you have questions, podcast@tested.com. Under 1 minute. Hometown trivia or would you rather's are welcome. And make sure you listen to it to make sure it sounds like the podcast does and not like you're recording it, you know, like from Keanu Reeves' position underneath a bus driving around the airport in L.A. Because sometimes we get ones that sound like road noise and occasionally a tiny voice popping up. Here we go. Here's the first question.
Hey, Tested Crew. My name is Noah, and I'm originally from Ashland, Massachusetts, where Henry Warren invented the electric clock in 1916. I love the site, and I've made a number of purchases based upon your recommendations. My question pertains to one of my favorite new things, the Zojirushi Thermos. I use this bottle on a daily basis, and it's accumulated coffee stains on the inside. In Will's What's in Your Bag for CES, he stated that he was going to carry water in the bottle, and I was wondering how you go about removing the coffee stains from the inside. Thanks, and always be testing.
One of the early inventions of man was soap. It turns out and shoes, exactly. If you add soap to water and then get a bottle brush, bottle brush is in the usually the baby diaper / formula section of the grocery store.
Yeah.
You want a pretty big one for this type of bottle.
Well, you can just get them like in the kitchen aisle, you know, brushes for cleaning dishes and stuff.
Yeah, if you have like a sponge wand, I think is what they're called, with like a round sponge on the end, that works well. Basically, just get in there with some soap and some water, heat it up real good, plunge it out.
I don't even bother the actual, you know, cylinder itself. I just flush with hot water and it's fine. But yeah, when you get that kind of what you've got there around the lip of it, I just whack a sponge or a bottle brush around there and it's all good.
Now the only place I have trouble with is the transition from the drinking area to the pouring area. There's a little chute in there. It's a little hard to get in. So I have actually a smaller bottle brush. I get in with that and clean that out.
All right.
Sometimes.
Well, you do the real detail work.
The bad thing is that when you do use it for coffee all the time, you don't clean it that often. The water does taste like there's a slight hint of coffee.
Mm. Yeah.
But I really like coffee, so it's okay.
It's a bonus for you.
Yeah. You know, coffee flavored water is the next product coming from Tested next year. We're launching in partnership with Minute Maid and Coca-Cola.
No, those water drops, the flavor enhancers.
Yeah, coffee water.
Remember those? You've seen those ads, basically food coloring with a little bit of salt or something, electrolytes.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's got what
plants
crave.
Brown colored water with coffee flavored
water.
Yeah. Did you say Zojirushi was also on sale? Someone tweeted, like Leah might have tweeted it.
I don't know.
$25.
Well, so they've changed the cap design a little bit since we tested it out. I gave them away as Christmas presents to almost everybody I knew this year. And a fantastic, big hit with everyone.
They really are miraculous.
Yeah, it's a tasting the future. I'm going to play another question.
Hey guys, this is Sean from a small town called Kingsbridge in the UK. First, some hometown trivia. There is a small village and beach near me called Slapton where, in World War II, the Americans came to practice their D-Day landings. We used a tank as a memorial that fell off one of the ships during a training accident. And my question. With me in the market for an ultrabook, I was very excited to see HP's MacBook rival, the MV14, at CES. But somewhere deep in the back of my mind, I couldn't help but remember what happened to the touchpad and how they hung you out to dry with it. Do you think that whole fiasco is worth worrying about if I'm looking at investing in the MV? And as a whole, do you think HP have burned a lot of bridges? Thanks, guys. Love the show and always be testing.
Let's go backward on this question. I don't think they've burned a lot of bridges. I think staying in the PC market is smart for them, and where they spend their money is moving forward is not going to be as poorly thought out as what they did with the touchpad.
Well, there's a couple of other things happening. I think that hey, we're going to sell the PC division, pre-announcing the sale of the PC division was one of the biggest boners of 2011. They've since, with Meg Whitman in charge, they've since said that we're committed to the PC business.
And the touchpad, a tablet with their own OS, is completely different from a laptop with Windows. Even if their PC division does go away, it's not like you then can't use that laptop that you spent money on.
Yeah, you'll still be able to get driver updates from NVIDIA, Intel, ATI, whoever has the graphics in that machine.
And then moving forward, even to the first part of your question, whether you should look into the HP NV14 Spectre, first of all, that's not an ultrabook because they don't want to call it that. It's £4 and $1,400.
It's too heavy and too thick.
Yes, and too expensive. Frankly, but it did look nice with that Gorilla Glass on top. There are, if you want to spend that kind of money for that kind of PC and you don't mind the weight, you should look at that and the Samsung Series 9.
Yeah, that's good advice. I think Samsung Series 9 is more applicable for me. I'm more interested in a lightweight device than a giant heavy device. And that Gorilla Glass Black looks like it's going to add a lot of weight to that NV14.
And of course,
it does look really cool.
Like you mentioned earlier with the Asus ZenBook that you've been testing, the most important things are the keyboard and trackpad and screen for your user experience, because the guts are all the same.
Right. Unless you're doing heavy lifting workloads like video editing and stuff like that, the guts are going to be sufficient for whatever you're going to be doing. The thing you want to look at are storage and like Norm said, input devices. Input is super key.
All right. You want to take one more question?
Yeah, let's do one more. Okay. Does Gary have a question?
I don't know if Gary has a question, but Gary had a good would you rather on the drive back.
Well, let's do that on the fake out. Okay, let's do that. Okay. I'm going to do one more question first, though. We had four good questions this week.
Hey guys, Noah from CT here. Quick but hometown trivia. I'm from a rural little town in Connecticut known only for Lyme disease. Anyways, here's my question. I was wondering if you guys ever tend to think people go overboard comparing other tech companies' products to Apple products. Now, I understand Apple sets a lot of trends and they make really solid products overall, but my example in particular here is the new Vizio laptops. I'm pretty excited about them. I think Vizio tends to make pretty solid products for the most part. I really like the design on these things, and I've heard a lot of companies compare them to Apple's MacBook Airs. Now, obviously, they had a big effect on the industry, thinner and thinner laptops, Intel's whole Ultrabook initiative. But aside from the thinness of these laptops, I don't see the comparison. They're a darker color, like a more dark gunmetal gray. They have less curve to them and more of really sharp angular edges, which I think is neat. I mean, when it comes down to it, all laptops are going to be two folding pieces of plastic or aluminum, and I think there's only so much you can do to differentiate your product. I mean, they could have made them black. Would that have somehow made them look different? I'm not sure. I just wondered what you guys' thoughts were on that, and that's it. Always be testing.
What do you think, Norm?
I don't think it's unfair to make comparisons to MacBook Airs when, in some cases, they look just like MacBook Airs.
I would say something similar that when Apple releases a product and then 20 other companies try to release a product just like it, comparisons are, you're asking for it.
And also, obviously, even if they didn't look like it, we're talking about the market segments. If Apple releases a product, remember, MacBook Air is 4 years old, turned 4 years old a couple of days ago. When they first released that, people laughed at them. Who's going to spend $2,000
on Dell
the novelty of a thin light? Exactly. Yeah. And now it is the standard almost for laptops.
$1,000 laptop, it is the gold standard.
And so regardless of what these laptops look like, the comparison is apt. The reference is apt.
I would also, just as a side point, I would just say that I actually think Vizio is a really great brand. I'm not loyal to many brands, and But I do. I have a Vizio TV at home that I got. It was a 42-inch TV. I got it at a great price at Costco.
Yeah.
I never had a problem with it. And I like that they're diversifying now. They make laptops, and I think they make iPod docks and other accessories.
Make all
like,
sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Vizio is good. Like you think of it as like kind of
it's a workhorse brand.
You think of it as kind of a bottom end like bargain brand, but you actually I think they make good stuff.
Well, it's like the Budweiser situation. So Budweiser spends the vast majority of its operating budget on marketing. Same thing for Sharp and Panasonic and Sony and Apple. Vizio doesn't spend money on marketing. They just make products that are good and serviceable and pass on the savings to the consumer.
Yeah. They get their reputation because of the pricing and also where they're available. They went straight to the Costcos, which people usually associate with the bottom end brands.
Right.
But what they did, and there's a good story behind how they kind of entered the TV business, is that they didn't play the monopoly oligopoly game, and they launched their TVs with good panels at reasonable prices, as opposed to keeping prices high, which is what a lot of the bigger TV manufacturers colluded to do. And they were punished severely for that in terms of hundreds of millions of dollars in fines.
Yeah, so, but, which is compares not at all to the amount of money that they made with the price fixing during the time it was going
so
on.
So Vizio kind of broke out as to be well known in our circles as a very good TV manufacturer. And people obviously are buying them because price matters a lot.
Yeah, people go and they see these fucking people go, oh, I should get a Sony Bravia TV. I see the commercial. They go in there and they see the sticker and they go, fuck that. And they pick up a Vizio instead. Well,
and the other thing is, with the upsells on TVs mattering less and less every year, the 3D and the smart apps and all that bullshit being completely unimportant.
People just want a TV.
Yeah, if you just want a TV, go buy a Vizio. It's fantastic.
I agree.
And that'll do it for questions this week. And that'll wrap up our show. For Gary Witt and Norman Chan, always a pleasure having you guys here. Thank you for coming out. It's nice to be back in the sweaty man cave down here. I think
good to be back in familiar surroundings, however grim they may be.
Yeah, I like having the big mic in front of me. I missed that. That was we'll have to bring those to CES next year. But we'll be back next Thursday with another episode of This Is Only a Test. As always, if you're a premium whiskey member, you can watch us live on Thursday morning. I think you're going to be out of town next week, Gary. Right?
Next week I will not be around.
I'm going to think we're going to see if we can get Lloyd to come in and sub in for you. I don't know if you can talk about where you're going, but it sounds exciting.
I'm going to go. I'm going to Philadelphia.
For the start of shooting on your next movie.
They haven't quite started shooting yet, but I'm going to get to go and they've built all the sets and everything is ready to go, basically. So I'm going to get to look around the sets and see what the movie's actually going to look like.
Cool.
Check out the art department, and Will and Jaden are there as well. They're rehearsing. Like the whole thing is very much all systems go. And I think they start shooting in a couple of weeks. So I'm going to go out there right as they're at, like, you know, all try, you know, in the same way as I did with Eli, you know, it's nice to be there, but you're very conscious of like not being in the way.
If you want, I can give you a signed headshot of me to give Will Smith.
I'm sure he would love that. And also, I'm going to try and do a couple of, since we're in Philadelphia, it's a couple of things we want to do. I am taking recommendations for cheesesteaks. I've heard that Gino's and Pat's are the places to go to.
I've been to both. The trick is to go, both of you go to, they're right across the street from each other.
Oh, okay.
One go get one go get the other, and then you eat half and compare.
All right.
They taste exactly the same.
Okay. And there's some other place that I heard, I actually chatted to a guy from Philly when I was in Vegas, and he said, Gino's and Pat's, yeah, you always hear about those, but here's the actual place you want to go to. I think it was he's the Prince of Steak. That's all I know. Ooh, I don't remember the name.
I like that.
I'm told that that's like the inside recommendation.
If he's the Prince, he has a reason to strive. If you're the King of Cheesesteak, why would you struggle?
And I also want to go to Independence Hall, which I think we're looking into. I hope you don't have to make a reservation.
You should make a reservation.
Yeah, we're going to try and do that. But, you know, I love American Revolutionary history and fascinated by that. So to go to Independence Hall.
You can see the bell. But the bell isn't in the hall. The bell's in the park.
I care less about the bell than I do the hall itself.
Really cool.
Yeah. Well, we'll do both.
It's the symbol of freedom.
Yeah.
So the back bar.
Tracy Jordan went over to Philadelphia. It's a good episode. 30 Rock.
Is it like Stonehenge, though, when you actually get out there, like it's all very carefully controlled, like how close you can get to it and stuff?
I haven't actually been in Independence Hall because I didn't get a reservation.
I'm talking about the bell.
The bell you can walk up to, I think you can get like 10 feet away from it or something.
Okay.
It's not like you can hover hands in and get your picture taken.
And I'm sure there's all kinds of cool stuff, historical stuff there that I'm not even aware of, but I know I want to see Independence Hall.
Oh, yeah. Well, Independence Hall is where, where they signed the Magna Carta, I believe.
What?
That was yesterday's show. My bad. It's where they signed the Declaration of Independence, right? Cartman was
there. Hence its historical interest.
Oh, my goodness. Before we go to fake outtakes and you exit the show, we also want to say that the audio clip you're about to hear was created by one of you guys.
Yeah, so we posted before Anna left. She gave me the raw audio file that she then dumps dumps the witty sound bites that change every weekend. It's in the forums. It's a Lane thread. It's in the This Is Only a Test forum if you want to check it out and participate. And I'm picking out the best ones and I'll run them. Right now we have about 6 months worth, I think.
They are quite good. God damn it. No tickets to Independence Hall until peak season in March.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, so you just wait in line now then.
I don't know. I don't know if that means that we're not going at all or if that means you have to wait.
We can always go and look outside.
Yeah, but I want to go inside and see the actual room.
I'm sure you – okay.
It's one of my favorite – I don't know if you ever saw the HBO John Adams series, which was brilliant. You should see it. I've got the Blu-ray if you want to borrow it. There's a scene at the very end of the series where they show him – I can't remember who painted it, but there's a famous painting of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And they show it, they unveil it to John Adams, who obviously was there. And he's like, this isn't what it was like at all. You've got it all wrong. You've made it all dramatic and stuff. But that's actually not what the Declaration of Independence, what it looked like at all. That's a bummer. But, you know, hey, cheesesteaks.
Well, I think you just go without a reservation. We were there in the summertime.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll find out. I asked Research. Leah's looking into it.
Research must. At worst case, you get a couple of cheesesteaks out of it. So
that's why I said the cheesesteaks at the bare minimum. I have to figure out how to order like a local though.
Yeah, do it Anthony Bourdain style. No reservations.
You get it with Wiz, right?
Yeah, you got to.
It's always with Wiz.
Always. Yeah.
And
can I just be a bit of a Reuben and say, look, I have no fucking idea what I'm doing. Give it to me the way you would give it to a local. I don't know how to order it, but that's what I want.
Pay me like you've paid your French girls.
Yeah, no. That's right. I want.
Why would you go back?
So what's the official version? Does it come with onions and peppers, or is it just meat?
Onions
and cheese?
And peppers and cheese and meat. That's
but
my
not cheese, but actually like cheese whiz.
Cheese whiz. Yeah.
Yeah, with whiz. That's what I want. Yeah, whiz. I think you don't even say whiz. You just say wit. I want it wit, and that means you want it with whiz.
You've thought about this way more than I.
We got to do it right. When in Rome,
or Philadelphia,
Never
heard that phrase before.
What?
When in Rome?
When in Rome?
You've never heard when in Rome?
Do as the Romans.
Stop trolling.
Is he trolling me?
He's trolling.
I can never tell with him. He's got these weird gaps in his knowledge that
we all do.
Freak me out sometimes.
I'm going to play a close contributed by a member of the community. I don't remember who it was. I should put the names in the.
This is a new one.
Files. This is a new one.
All right. Very exciting.
This is a world premiere.
All right. Here we go.
First one ever created by someone other than Anna. Here we go.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
That's it.
Boots and gloves and a dozen pissed off raccoons. Alright, it's not bad.
Gary, what is a world premiere? I feel like
that's a big moment for me to be in one of those bumpers like
you feel
that.
Like you finally made it.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had a Hollywood opening, written numerous comic books, were the editor in chief of PC Gamer for decades. But being part of the closing song of This Is Only a Test, the podcast that you're on every single week was really the sign that you've arrived.
And I think it's good that, you know, it was inevitable, I think, that you went with one of the big moments. Raccoons and Jedi Training Academy are, I think, my two my only two highlights.
I was surprised
to be one of those.
I was surprised nobody had pulled Fucked for Life out. I was kind of hoping for...
Maybe they want to keep it clean for the kids. My New Year's resolution is I'm trying to curse less this year.
Good luck with that.
How's it going? Going so far?
You haven't been really pissed off about anything in a while, so...
Couple things we want to talk about. Let's keep this brief because we have it's been a long podcast. On the drive back, you issued a very clever Would You Rather. I thought it was
I lost a couple of followers.
Oh my God,
I lost a couple of followers over that.
Oh, really? And the question was, you just out of nowhere, it's Norm. Would you rather give up Twitter or give up
Or switch to an Android phone? No, what I said.
Oh, switch to an Android phone forever.
Yeah.
Or give up Twitter forever.
Yeah.
And I thought it was
initially were really stumped, but quite quickly I think the answer presented itself.
I would switch to an Android phone.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't.
And we tweeted that, and I get why so this podcast I think unfairly has a reputation for being very harsh on Android. I think we give it yes, sometimes we say some mean things about Android, but I think we're generally pretty fair. And one example of it is your decision here is that even though you might find the iPhone preferable to Android. Mm-hmm. An Android phone at the end of the day is actually perfectly fine.
Oh yeah.
But good experience.
If you like things that are laggy and kind of shit, Android's great.
See, it was going fine until and I'm the one that gets the grief. I'm being the moderate over here, and then he comes in.
I was just thinking what Gary would have said last year before the less cursing.
That's before I rehabilitated myself. No. But in the end, but you do really like you use Twitter. We all do. We like Twitter a lot. Yeah. And if it were to go away, we'd be very sad.
Very sad. No, not if it were to go away. If my access to it were to go away.
Then you're on the outside looking in.
It's like being blocked by everyone I care about.
Oh my God, did you see this amazing tweet? Oh, of course you didn't, Norm.
No, sorry.
Norm.
Oh, that's Google Plus.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it'll show up on Google Plus one day.
Yeah, somebody will probably share it.
I passed 500,000 followers on Google Plus today.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, I think some of them are actually real people.
Today was another milestone for you. You weighed in 60 pounds less than your peak weight.
Yeah, that was a good one for me.
Last summer. That's a good one.
So I started at 238 pounds last summer, and I weighed in today at 178 pounds.
That's awesome, dude. You look really good.
Thank you. I feel good about it. I think I'm going to stop. Now I think
you don't want to look Lindsay Lohan amazing.
No, my goal was according to BMI, which I think is bullshit anyway, but according to all the things, the correct weight for my height, which is like 5'10 and a half, 5'11, is between 175 180 pounds.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I'll be happy just to stay here. The trick, this is my other resolution, is just to maintain that weight and not put it back on. Yeah. The trick is now to switch from the kind of diet where I've been losing the weight to the maintenance, where you stay where you want to be.
Yeah.
Mm. The second topic I want to talk about before you get into
I want to go back to the Twitter thing real quick.
Sure.
Something annoyed me about Twitter yesterday, and it doesn't happen very often. But I asked a question, and usually, at least for me, I don't know about you guys, but when I ask a question on Twitter, it is the last resort. It means I've done some Googling, I've looked at relevant message boards. And I'm stumped.
You're looking for insight.
And I'm looking for novel solutions to problems that I'm facing.
This is your Dominion card box.
This is the Dominion card box.
Oh,
question.
That thing, yeah.
So I bought, to date, all of the Dominion expansions, which is, I think, like 1,000 cards, 1,500 cards, maybe more than that. It's basically six boxes, I think, because it's Dominion Intrigue, Seaside, Alchemy, Hinterlands, Prosperity, Cornucopia.
Yeah, a lot of expansions.
Wow. Seven Dominion expansions. Well, but the thing is, the way Gina and I like to play is we literally generate a random deck out of all of them.
Oh, right? You can mix and match.
So typically when like we go over to somebody's house or something, we bring like one or two boxes and you play like Intrigue and Prosperity or Intrigue and Cornucopia or something.
I've never played anything other than Vanilla Dominion. So.
Well, you have, because you've been at our house. You just don't know.
Oh, have we? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But it's much more fun if you have all the kind of different crazy mechanics from each of the – because the way he expanded that game is each one introduces different mechanics. So base is kind of like a potpourri of everything. Intrigue is a lot of interaction between players.
Right.
Cornucopia benefits from having a varied deck, a non-homogeneous deck.
Yeah.
Prosperity is all about having lots and lots of money, et cetera.
But you can basically throw all the cards in together and play. Okay.
This is the magical thing about this game.
Yeah.
But it's a huge pain in the ass to make that happen because you have like seven boxes stacked up on the side of the table and you pull two things out of each box. So what I really want is a storage solution that lets me put all of the cards, all of the Dominion cards, in one or two boxes, and they're organized in a way that it's easy to get them out and easy to put them back. It's not like if I drop the box by accident, everything doesn't go everywhere and I have to spend 3 hours putting it all back together.
It seems like a gaming specialty supply store would have like that.
So the problem is Dominion cards are a little bit non-standard size. So they don't fit. They're a little too small for magic boxes.
Right.
And they're a little too big for other things. It's a very specific problem. I'm surprised that Rio Grande hasn't actually addressed this. But the thing that happened was 40 people immediately responded with one of the top three Google links for Dominion card storage.
Right.
Obviously, that's the first thing I did.
So was your disappointment in
the A, that people thought I wouldn't have Googled?
So you're disappointed in the people, less so Twitter.
Well, the people are the Twitter.
Okay.
Twitter is only as good as the people who follow you and you follow.
You could have been more specific and made assumptions.
Yeah, Twitter didn't annoy you. The people on Twitter annoyed you.
Okay, fair
enough. People annoyed you.
Right. Like, I would have been annoyed if people were snarky and gave, like...
They were snarky. They were like, you should have Googled this. It's right here.
Did you get...
Like, this is not a fucking... This is... And some of these people are friends of mine.
Maybe did you get a let me Google that for you?
No, nobody... No, if somebody did that, they would have been insta-blocked.
I like to bust those out on people from time to time.
I do that when... Yeah, but I'm kind of an asshole, so I can get away with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a bummer for me. I'm going to go to the Container Store with some cards tomorrow.
You've all disappointed. If only you had a follower who worked at a card store.
Well, the other solution is, of course, the card, the long cardboard boxes, the folding cardboard boxes. I don't want to do that because A, it looks shitty, and B, I don't think that those are going to hold up as much as I play Dominion. So I don't want to come over to somebody's house with a giant ass cardboard box. I want like a poker box.
Yeah,
like a, I know like what a you poker mean. Chipset, something that I can open up. It's a little bit of a flourish. It holds all the it holds all the mats. It holds all the tokens. All of the shit that comes with all the different expansions. The
fireworks and a song and a dance. And
I want people to be impressed.
You want like more like a wooden chest that like cantilevers out like different tiers of stuff.
Yeah, like a tackle box, but not plastic.
Maybe travel around with a big handle.
Maybe Gamer Chic, whatever that company is, going to make a bespoke.
You know, I'm going to call them and talk about that because that's something that I bet they could sell a fair amount of.
If you were Howard Hughes or something, you could hook that shit up.
You could just make it yourself.
Remember when, like, that story about Howard Hughes later in his life, like his favorite ice cream flavor was like some peanut butter and banana or whatever.
Fingernails.
And he bought it by the truckload.
It's like Steve Jobs with the Louboutin mock turtlenecks.
He found out that the company that made his favorite flavor of ice cream was going out of business, and he wouldn't be able to get his ice cream anymore. So he just bought the company and just paid to keep it in business so he could continue to eat that ice cream.
Awesome.
That is power.
Yes.
That's money. That's 1% shit right there.
You're talking about 0.00.
Yeah, that's the top 1%. That's 1% of the 1%.
Yeah. One more random topic. Star Trek Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was brought earlier today.
What?
Very excited.
On StarTrek.com, a legitimate Who Wants to Be a Millionaire style game, only Star Trek questions with virtual Star Trek Regis.
Now, what platforms is this on?
Wow.
Xbox 360 and PS3.
So, I love it. I'll be buying that.
And the questions initially will be TOS only, although...
See, that's my weakest series.
It is. Well, it might make it fun. 600 questions to start with host, audience, and contestants. Lifelines, everything you'd expect from that franchise.
Kind of ironic because there's no money in Star Trek.
Very good. Yeah.
It's true. Just energy. Energy credits.
Yeah.
Gold Press Latinum. Yeah.
Gold is worthless. It's a Latinum, which you can...
Latinum you can't replicate.
Store in one of your five stomachs.
Exactly.
So,
Norman.
Yes.
Morn was the guy who had...
Norman.
Morn had the multiple stomachs.
Your name is a Ferengi
name.
And
Morn was played by Norm from Cheers, and it was a spoof of that, because he always had at the bar didn't say anything. You would not win.
I don't watch DS9. Fuck that. That show was terrible.
Is that true that it was based on Norm from Cheers?
Yeah, Morn. Norm.
George Knight.
Mind blown.
Morn and Norm.
I never put that together.
Yeah.
Norm.
If when he walked into Quark's, they all went, Morn, then that's one, that's one thing.
Yeah.
Anything else, Chad?
I think I kind of had to know that because it's like affiliated name-wise. Right.
Should we
I think we should leave. I think we're done with the podcast.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah. It's been a good show. Thanks for coming out, guys.
Get this fucking thing done. Okay. People are getting sick of all this teasing that you're doing. So just get it out there.
We posted a post.
Yeah. So, this has kind of been germinating.
This has been in the works since you came to my house recently for a certain kind of activity.
And even before then, because last year we've wanted to do a serialized piece of content for a long time.
Some kind of endurance run type
thing. And we talked about doing like a build a MAME cabinet or something like that, but we thought that would be kind of boring and involve a lot of soldering.
Well,
we'll probably do it anyway.
We will do that. Yeah. We did the Chrono Trigger, fake spoof.
Yeah, people really liked that.
And some people liked it.
I didn't see that.
It was App of the Day. We played Chrono Trigger.
We did App of the Day. And we did not endure. We did one episode, and that was it. 30 minutes. But then I went over to your house.
I like that when you cross over like that. It's kind of like when Superman shows up in a Batman comic.
Yeah. Right, or Laverne and Shirley come to visit Happy Days.
Yeah, it's cool.
I love it, yeah. And then I went over to your house during the holidays, before the new year.
Yeah.
And we had a great time playing Lego.
Building Lego. And we had Veronica Belmont and our friend Florence came over and several other people. Yep. And we had a great...
Florence. She's a lovely girl.
She's great. And we had a great time. Just building Legos together.
Maybe we should do that again.
Mine's, yeah.
Well, you guys didn't come, so you guys should come next time. We've still got lots of projects to build.
So we put two and two together.
You built Darth Vader's TIE fighter.
It was amazing.
You had a TIE Advanced prototype?
Yes.
Nice.
And I think Norm got the bug a little bit. He was
absolutely
very pleased with himself. It's so satisfying to build Lego. Create something. The pleasure of creation is just, it speaks to our human nature. We love it.
So
it's interesting because...
No. Hold on. The whole story.
Like when I played with Legos, it was always building things from my imagination, not following some sort of plan or builder.
Why, by the way, could you not be more aggressive like this when Mark Rain was on our podcast?
I was aggressive with Mark Rain.
Not enough.
Fucking Mark Rain, dude.
Yeah, what can you do?
Yeah, I mean, the guy's a notorious. You and I are windbags.
A man of strong opinions.
Mark Rain is a level three, where we're level 0.5.
Yeah, well, you know what helps that, though? The fact that he actually knows what he's talking about. Yeah.
Right. And
that's the difference between a windbag
right.
and someone that's actually just very forceful.
Dude
with
built
their
a company in like 2/3 of games that come out on consoles mm-hmm. or use his technology.
And
so
iOS and
he knows what's going on.
Rolling like Romney. Those motherfuckers over there.
I don't know. Don't
speaking
start with them on me.
Anyway, we wanted to do an endurance run thing for a long time. We don't know what to call it.
Endurance test is a bad name.
It's a
we
bad
admit
name.
That.
Completely acknowledge it. We also want to do something stupid for you guys because you like watching us do stupid things.
If
this is a success, we will do more of them. But we want to start with something simple that would leverage our strength. You know?
The community really backed this, right? You needed some additional funding to get this.
Yeah,
thing
we didn't
off the
want
ground.
To spend a bunch of money on something that people weren't excited about. So
plus, it doesn't mean that we won't do a main machine. We definitely will do that.
The main
in the
machine will be next, actually,
and we'll do some. You know, we'll do more advanced things. But we can't start off with something crazy that we'd fail at immediately. We want to get the rhythm right. Because we've never done this before, and
just to be clear, I am more excited about the MAME machine than anything we've done in a long time.
And that will absolutely happen.
Just Galaga and Ms. Pac-Man and Donkey Kong. I am so fucking hard in.
Yes. So we also didn't want to just build.
Would you fucking
Lego
open the box already?
On camera. Let me tell the story.
You know what you should do once that machine's built.
Yes.
That MAME machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should donate it or put it somewhere, like in a pizza parlor somewhere in San Francisco, where people could play it.
Yeah.
And it would be like they've become this thing where people could go play it. And instead of like the FBI winners don't do drugs, it just says the tested logo and it's got the website on it. So it'd be free advertising for you.
Or we could just put it in the office so we could play Ms. Pac-Man.
No, give it to the people. It'd be like a Blarney Stone. It'd be like a totemic thing where people say, I've played
on the Blarney Stone.
Or you could put it in a hut, you can put it in a secret place and make a treasure hunt out of it.
That I would do.
That would be sick.
That would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Like a scavenger hunt.
Can you find it and do clues?
Whoever finds it wins it.
Make it like an Arg.
So
yes, and a prize to whoever finds it first. That's a fucking sweet idea. And you
then
do
we'll
that.
Have to build two. Norman I'll race
you
and
do
see
it,
you can build a main
you
mechanic
do it,
first.
And you have it be an event that builds up to Octobercast.
That's not a terrible April Octobercast.
Well, whichever one I know you want to do two. Whichever one you want to do.
Okay.
We also discovered that building Lego is very conducive to conversation, and it can be entertaining. Just. Aside
I wasn't
from the
aware of this,
of
but
building
you,
Lego.
That's what you guys
yeah,
said.
Fun. Just
it's great. You're talking,
stuff.
You're chatting.
Yeah, kind of like an extension of the podcast. We didn't want to just build one Lego set because
that's for cowards.
That is for cowards, and we like to do competitive things.
I made a snow speeder. and it was a snow speeder and a Wumpa cave. So it had Luke hanging upside down from his feet, and it had a little lightsaber that went in a slot in a piece of Lego ice.
Wow.
And it had a little lever under it. So he's like going, like trying to reach it.
Yeah.
Trying to reach it and like closing his eyes. And there's a little lever, you press it, and it makes the lightsaber shoot out.
Did it go into his hand?
Well, no, that's a bit too precise, but like it shoots out toward him. It's fucking cool.
So
okay, that's cool.
We asked the readers. Because this is something not directly technology related.
This is such a long story.
Hey, we're getting there.
We asked the readers to contribute with tip jars, and you guys did come out in droves. And
the end is just the beginning.
All it took was one day to really fund it. And I want to call out a special reader, Crimson Jester, who donated a significant amount of money.
That was him. Yeah, he's like a platinum donor.
He is a gold press platinum donor.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's going to happen. We're going to start it. And the timing is perfect because would it arrive in this box? Will, you want us to open it?
Do you have a knife
to open
that? Why don't you do the one that is open first?
No. This one first.
Really?
Do this one first. Wow, that was easy.
Yeah. Well, it's not open yet. This always looks easy at first.
You're attached, remember.
Well, it's
no,
not
this
that,
is looking pretty
it's
easy.
It's not that fragile. It's already in pieces.
That's true.
It's not like you're going to break it.
Well, this is much smaller. Wow, that box is ridiculously oversized. For this Lego Death Star. Hold on, does it come with a TIE Advanced too?
It comes with many, many things.
Wow.
This is the Lego Death Star.
So this is the Lego Death Star. It's $400. It's 3,800
pieces.
3,803 pieces.
That is a significant
that
number
is a
of,
lot
pieces.
Of pieces.
And it rotates.
And it rotates.
On like a Lazy Susan.
Yeah.
Really?
All these different scenes. You're only seeing one half of it. There, look in the bottom left corner. You see the little rotation thing?
Oh, that's pretty rad.
It spins around and there's different scenes.
So it's a Lego Susan.
You've got the Death Star beam. You've got the trash compactor. You've got the cell block. You've got, you know, the weapon control room. You got all kinds of crazy
garbage
shit.
Yeah, the compactor.
Yeah.
Look at how scared Chewbacca is.
The trash compactor, which even includes the monster.
It is intimidating. Not only is it 3,800 pieces, which is many pieces, but doing our research, because we wanted to find something with last minute episodes, this alone, if you just spent, you know, nights and weekends, what, about 30 hours to build it straight. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we can marathon
And it does come with a Darth Vader tie. Look, a little mini one down there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. To scale. No, not really.
That's what you're building.
This is my project.
That's your task.
I'm not touching this.
No.
You know why? Because
Norm has a little something of his own. Oh. Super Star Destroyer.
Because I'm building this.
Wow. That's not even in the shot.
Now, this is fewer pieces, so is this 3,000 fair if you're going to do this as some kind of race?
100 pieces, also $400.
It's 124.4 centimeters long and has a stand.
This thing is insane.
And I'm going to be building this one.
I'm actually really, really jealous of this. I have the Death Star at home. Leah and I bought it last year, and we haven't got around to building it yet, but this is actually the one I really want. The Super Star Destroyer is fucking awesome.
So, 4.5 feet long, 3,152 pieces. We're going to be building them simultaneously in a competition.
Yes.
And to keep things interesting, there's still more twists and turns. This will be our amazing race. There will be challenges, roadblocks.
Right.
Things to infuriate us.
Roadblock is a registered trademark for Mark Burnett.
Yes.
Okay.
To make it endurance.
Right.
We will be frustrated. It will be more than just the process of building
Lego. This also, just for the long tail of this, this gives you also a free Lego Club membership.
Ooh.
So you get exclusive Legos you can't get in the store.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a little interested because, like, this Death Star, the Death Star Lego mixes episode 4 and episode 6 because there's both Luke Skywalkers. There's Tatooine uniform, Tatooine outfit Luke Skywalker and green lightsaber Luke Skywalker. Yeah. Palpatine is here. Darth Vader's here. Moff Tarkin's here.
Yeah, the Emperor. So the Emperor's throne room is there. It spans all the scenes, Death Star scenes
from all
three movies. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it wouldn't be Darth Vader's chamber because that was between Death Stars. Mm-hmm. But basically, if there was a major Death Star scene in the movie, it's on that model.
Yep.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So we are doing this as our test of endurance, whatever it's going to be called.
Yeah.
And it will be, you know how competitive we are. We will do everything in our
power. I will destroy you.
To screw with each other's build process.
Yes.
Yeah.
For your entertainment.
I don't know if people have ever, obviously we all played with Lego when we were a kid, but the Lego these days is a whole other deal. Just to prepare you for the instruction manual for that thing is basically a ring binder.
Can I get it on my iPad?
I don't know. Would that help you?
I think so.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll try.
But these things are staged builds. There are multiple, the pieces are pre-sorted into multiple bags that you build this component first, then this piece, and it slowly builds over time.
So the interesting thing about, so there's a few ground rules. One, no piece stealing.
We will establish all the ground rules in the first episode.
There's got to be some kind of honor system
here. This will be.
No honor, loves to win. Two defining characteristics.
Well, you are building two imperial structures, so it's probably not a lot of honor in it.
We'll be doing this. Hopefully, the video will start going up on
week
the site.
Week after next is the plan.
Start of February.
So what is it, like an hour at a time that you'll 30 spend?
30 minutes at a time.
30 minutes at a time.
All the rules and stuff and details will be established in the very first episode, which we're going to make free for people to watch.
Can I give you a recommendation?
Yeah, of course.
Well, this is all what I've learned from Leah, because Leah is much more of a Lego master builder than I am. She's really the expert. And what I've learned from watching her build, and this kind of plays into how you present this as well. Rule number one, when you're doing a build this big, and I've told you this already, you've got to sort your pieces first.
Well,
you've got to get them all laid out nice and neat so you understand where everything is.
Uh-huh.
And what I would suggest is do that before you start broadcasting.
Otherwise, you
will literally do 4 episodes of sorting pieces out.
That sounds
before
like a
you
lot
even
of fun.
Before you even start building
this might
them.
Be Perry work.
I'm more and more in the store.
No. You have to do the whole thing. You're not going to delegate any of this shit.
The interesting thing to me is that in a third of the time that it supposedly takes to build this Death Star, we built a machine that can print stuff, turns 3D models into physical objects.
How many
in the
how
real
many
world.
Pieces was that?
It was not 3,000.
Right.
Well, maybe with all the nuts and stuff.
So we're going to try to make this as interesting as possible.
Yeah.
And hope we get some feedback.
I look forward to the first person. It's going to be one of you, and it's going to happen at some point where you realize that you fucked up and you have to debuild a whole bunch of shit because you used the wrong piece or whatever. And now
it'll be on video.
It's going to happen.
It's going to be
inevitable in every Lego build.
Yeah, and I'm coming in this cold because normally came over to your house and built some Lego stuff. I haven't built anything Lego in 20 years, probably.
That's my other piece of advice, and I'm going to give it to both of you because I feel there should be an equitable playing field.
Yeah,
go to the Lego store, go to the website, and spend the $3, whatever it is. Get the brick separator. Because that will save your sanity.
I don't think we're allowed to have that.
Oh, I think you are.
I think we can both have the brick separator.
If you can both have it, you can both have it. Actually, no, I think there should be one.
One shared one.
And you can sort it out amongst yourselves.
Maybe the brick separator is one of the rewards for completing a challenge.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
You'll need it.
Good advice, Gary. Thank you, as always. So, yeah, we're both excited.
I'm extremely excited.
We need help with the name. So, let's start a thread in the forums.
I liked Bricked.
Okay. Specifically for this edition.
Endurance test colon brick.
Test of endurance bricked.
I don't like the. We need a better name.
You should call it the amazing something.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
The amazing build.
The amazing
or whatever.
Test.
The amazing test. Yeah. For those of you who want something more technical, this is just the first one we're doing. We will move on to robots and main machine stuff.
Start simple with a 3,000-piece Lego build.
6,000-piece Lego.
6,000-piece. Now, is there going to be any kind of officiating?
Yes.
Because I don't trust either of them.
Well, we're hoping that friends of the site can come by and pop in here and there to help judge. You're, of course, always welcome, Gary. We'll record
some on Thursdays. I'll look in from time to time.
And I think Ryan has volunteered to come in and troll us pretty heavily as we do this.
Do you anticipate shenanigans?
I would say that there will be shenanigans. I think that's safe to assume.
I get so stressed out.
Norm is already thinking about ways he's going to choke.
Now, we haven't revealed this yet, and I don't think we will, but there is a competitive aspect, and obviously there has to be a prize and a penalty, prize for the winner and a penalty for the loser.
We'll determine that, and it will all be presented in the first episode.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Whoever loses has to wear the Princess Leia headphones.
High stakes Lego. I'm going to start a pool. I think there needs to be some side betting.
Okay,
ready to go back to Vegas.
Fantastic.
Yeah, why not? I got the bug. I got to bet on something. You should have been there when me and my friend John were at the Palazzo at 5 o'clock in the morning, and the blackjack table was no longer enough. And you know you're in a place somewhere too late when you can start seeing when people are vacuuming around you. The guys going by, two guys going by on like big carpet Zambonis at like 4 miles an hour, and we started betting on those guys. That's how desperate we were for some action. Why not? It's Vegas.
Crimson Gesture says, as a platinum donor, he is not going to allow sorted pieces.
Wow.
You have to. Otherwise, it's going to be chaos.
You'll never get it.
I think regardless of how sorted they are, it's still going to be chaos. You're going to be doing this next year.
Oh, God. This is horrible. Why did you make us do this, Jen?
When I bought that Death Star, Leah and I bought it. We haven't built it yet because you build up to it.
It's daunting.
We've been building the smaller things.
Should I go buy some Lego stuff to kind of warm up this weekend?
I would highly... highly recommend you buy a smaller build and practice on something.
Okay.
Get like the Lego Space Shuttle or the Lego
X-Wing Fighter.
The Lego
like
White House or, you know, you can get an X-Wing Fighter or a Slave One. There's many smaller pieces out there.
My hands are getting sweaty just thinking about it.
Highly recommend it. But when we bought that, the guy was like, oh, you bought the Death Star. Good choice. And I said, how long is it going to take to build this thing? And he said, if you do an hour or so a day, you could probably build it in like a month. I'm like, holy shit.
God. Oh, God.
I think he was really padding that. I think you'll get it done quicker than that. But
yeah. Okay.
Hopefully at least 6 weeks of
Lego is much more complicated than you remember it being. I built something really small, and it ended up taking basically all night. And the girls who were building this Lego pet shop that was very cool, they were like four or five of them all pitching in together. And we were there all night, and they still barely just got it finished. And these were people that knew how to build Lego.
Yeah. So coming in as a rank amateur, I'm at a pretty substantial. Do I get better odds than Chan? Is that what's happening here? Is it going
to
be? No, like
I think there's going to have to be some kind of spread.
He's the favorite.
Yeah, there's going to have to be odds.
He has smaller hands than me.
I don't think it can be even.
That's an
money.
Advantage.
I don't know which one of you are. I would favor Norm though, because he's done those PC speed builds. And because he's just...
What the fuck do you mean he did the PC speed build? I won.
Did you?
And I did the same thing blindfolded and faster than he did.
Oh, there should be a blindfold section of this.
Well, I think that's one of the penalties.
Challenges. Many, many challenges. We welcome suggestions.
All kinds of challenges along the way to keep it interesting, keep it spicy.
Yes.
Norm has... Ooh. The one advantage he has is that he did build that TIE fighter. It doesn't sound like a big deal, but trust me, there's a whole language and understanding building Lego. Go get a small... thing and build it.
Leah's already invited us over. We're coming over this weekend. So,
has she?
Yeah. Congratulations.
Who did? What?
Leah just Twittered.
Why am I always the last person to know?
You guys should come over and build some small projects.
Oh, we do wait in line at Independence Hall. Woohoo! We're going.
Okay.
So get yourself a piece. I think I'm finally gonna build that Frank Lloyd Wright house that I'd be wanting to.
Oh, yeah, you can come in and join us with the Lego and build like a small
you're invited as well. You can build something.
Well, hold on, then he has an advantage because he's done two.
Well, that's not my problem. You're going to freeze Norm out of a pleasant social gathering?
Norm has to sit in the corner quietly, not touching you. Lego.
I made plans with you this weekend to play Game of Thrones already.
Oh,
I
think, hold on. Well, hold on. Wait, what? What?
I don't know.
I wanted to be the dwarf.
Leah said we were busy this weekend, so I didn't assume there was anything going on.
Well, I see how it is.
I don't know. All right. Maybe Sunday.
That'll do it for us this week.
Lego.
As always, a pleasure, gentlemen.
I hope that your community is excited about
they
this.
They seem to be very excited.
Good.
Except for be a lot that one guy who doesn't like Lego.
He doesn't like Lego?
Yeah, I don't
ban
know
him. Ban him from the site. Give him his money back.
If we ban, they don't get their money back. That's not how it works.
Oh, good.
It's like something awful.
All sales are final.
Right. Yeah, bad behavior does not recuse you from your purchase.
So just ban him.
I'm not going to ban him. So that'll do it for us this week. We'll be back next Thursday with more. This is only a test. And check out the site. We got a bunch of good stuff up this week. And we're going to do some CES wrap stuff. Shoot that tomorrow. It should be up early next week. We wanted to give a little bit of time to kind of stew and think about the repercussions of the stuff we saw at CES this year. So see you guys next week. Bye. Bye, video people. Bye, podcast record people.